with the Marion County Courthouse, and the judges got all the good hearing rooms, and being the good lawyer that I am, I chose to defer to them. So they have all the good hearing rooms, so that's why we're squeezing you in here this morning. We're going to take a few appointments with people who need to leave or have other appointments. Some of them will be on the phone. If there is anyone in the audience that needs to get out of here relatively shortly, if you'd send us a note up, we'll try and accommodate you to the best possible. The other thing is we are having some folks testify via phone, so we really appreciate your patience as we try and coordinate our conference capacity with some of our members and some of our witnesses. Senator Bates?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good. You're in front of a very packed room this morning, joined by your colleagues, Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Dave Nelson. We're glad you could join us via phone this morning.
Thank you.
Would Mr. Bill Blosser come on up, please? Is he here?
I don't see him.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Joe Smith. He's on the phone? Okay, hang on. We pull him up via phone.
Snooze, you lose.
Okay, we're having some technical
difficulties. For folks that are new, we would ask you to tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on the particular board or commission. For folks that are taking paid positions, we will probably take a more extensive opportunity to grill you. So I think you've already been warned.
Great, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
We have on the conference capacity Dr. Representative Senator Alan Bates.
Whatever.
And to my left is Senator Betsy Johnson, and to my right is Senator Dave Nelson. We're expecting Senator Farioli to join us, and you're in front of a fairly crowded room full of folks. So we'd like to have you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the State Aviation Board.
Well, first, I would like to thank you very much for permitting me to testify by telephone, and this worked out very well because I just arrived at the Roseburg Airport. I've been here about 8 minutes, and the reason I'm in Roseburg is that the Aviation Board is meeting today, and I felt it was incumbent upon me in the hopes that you favored my appointment, that I really ought to be there. Of course, I was on the Aviation Board 2 years ago for a couple of years. I've been flying for going on 43 years, and I have an intense interest in seeing aviation flourish as part of the transportation system of the state and really of the nation, both not just for the recreation which people often think of when they're in smaller planes, but it is a very, very important component of the business community, and I think that I have something to offer, both because I have flown for a long time. When I was in Washington, D.C., I worked for a law firm that specialized in aviation law. I've learned a lot about that. I am the president-elect of the Oregon Pilots Association, and I think all of those things legitimately qualify me for the job.
Thank you. And I assume, did you fly yourself down to Roseburg?
Actually, I drove down this morning because my airplane just got a new engine, and we changed the oil yesterday, and it turned out that the filter on the new engine didn't fit the filters we had, and so I wasn't able to. I got up early this morning and drove.
Okay. Senator Johnson, any questions?
I actually do. Good morning, Joe, and thanks for your willingness to serve. One of the issues that's come up recently in the aviation community is the relationship between the Department of Aviation's board and the constituents that they serve. And there have been some questions about transparency of board deliberations, allowing adequate comment periods between proposed rulemaking and rule adoption. And I would ask you to comment briefly on how you intend to use your period of service, assuming confirmation, to reconnect, particularly given your new assignment as head of OPA, how you would go about reconnecting the aviation constituents with a board that I think they have grown increasingly distant from.
Well, let me say first, when I first was appointed to the board 5 years ago, they were in the process of going through all of the applicable rules for the board's activity, and I take some pride in feeling that I wouldn't say I slowed down the process, but I really felt that I was one of those on the board at that time that insisted that there be plenty of notice and that there be opportunity for people to be heard and that we responded. And we did a lot of amending of the initially proposed rules during that period, and I felt quite good about the product that we came out with. And I attended the last aviation board meeting when I learned that one of my assignments for the Oregon Pilots Association was to serve as liaison for OPA with the board. At that time, I had not been appointed to the board. And I informed the board that I looked upon my role for OPA not as somebody coming to look over their shoulder, but as coming to look for opportunities to work together. And I would hope to bring that spirit going in both directions as a member of the board. I also would say I'm a little uneasy. It's a little uneasy because I just sent all the materials for the meeting as a courtesy, which I appreciated. And one of the things in there was a suggestion that the board should do as much as possible before board meetings, so the board meetings were short. And I have to confess that is contrary to my view. I think we should do as much as possible in board meetings so it is open and people see what we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Follow-up, Madam Chair. That was precisely the memorandum that I was about to bore in with additional detail. I find it very alarming that there would be a suggestion that the lion's share of the board's deliberations occur outside of the public process. I found that very worrisome, and I am delighted to hear you comment that came to your attention and that's contrary to your notion of doing the public's business with respect to this board.
I feel quite strongly about that.
Thank you.
Sarah Nelson?
Mr. Smith, I think that ends it. The only question I would ask you is, I see one of the ways to overcome the urban-rural divide is by expanding our rural airports. Any thoughts, any interest in that arena?
You're expanding. I missed the word before airports. You said expanding our something.
Rural airports.
Rural airports. Oh, absolutely. One of the things I was very disappointed when I was on the board was Valier County airport that we were hoping to happen, what didn't happen, and I now discover it is going to happen, and which makes me feel really good about that. And one of the things that I think we have to watch very carefully is to protect against the closure or deterioration of rural airports, because as we enable through the use of cable connections more and more businesses to be located on especially on the east side of the mountains and on the coast, it becomes all the more important for people to be able to physically get quickly to and from.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Johnson.
One last follow-up following my theme of transparency. I would assume that there will be some good aviation projects coming forward seeking funding under the aviation portion of Connect Oregon. And I hope that the board takes ample opportunity to include the public in vetting those applications as you work through your board process. I'm hopeful that we can have some showcase aviation projects under the Connect Oregon legislation, and I would just welcome your comment on that.
I join you in that hope, and I will be doing everything I can to make that happen.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Smith? Mr. Smith, we appreciate your willingness to serve, and we'll be in touch. If there are any concerns, I'm sure the governor's office will be in touch with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for letting me do it this way.
I can't hang up on him, right? Because then I need
to hang up.
Okay.
On us.
All right. We need you to hang up on us. You did it.
Okay. Good.
Mr. Blosser, do you want to come on forward? Good morning. Welcome. How are you this morning?
I'm just fine. Thank you, Senator Brown.
Good. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Environmental Quality Commission?
Well, as you've probably seen from my application, I have served on a couple of other commissions in the past, and it's long been a feeling of mine that it's one of the most extraordinary things in the world for a citizen to be able to serve on a commission like this, that the legislature has given as much authority as it has to do policymaking. And so I just feel it's sort of a duty and an obligation of citizens to try and get involved in commissions to the extent that they can. With respect to the Environmental Quality Commission, as you've probably also seen from my application, I've served on a number of their committees over the years, the last 10 or 15 years. And so I've been around that commission quite a bit, and I've always kind of had in the back of my mind as a goal that I would love to serve on that commission. The particular areas that it covers are ones that have been, from my professional career, that I've been involved in for a long time, water quality issues, air quality issues. And so I just, seems to me it's just a natural thing that I wanted to do for a long time, and that I would be very honored to have the opportunity to do.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Blasser? Senator Farriola.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Madam Chairman, I apologize for being a little late this morning. I finally succumbed to the vectoring agent that Senator Johnson carried around for the last 3 months.
We know it's a long drive from John Day.
Actually, a couple questions, Madam Chair. I'm curious to know if you have formed an opinion about the pollution control tax credits that are so important to industry in Oregon.
I really have not. I am aware of the controversy that swirls around that, but I have never really gotten involved in it or really looked into the details on it. I'm aware that this is an agenda item virtually every meeting for the commission that has to deal with these applications, and I've seen articles that say that some of these don't seem to be fair and some of them seem to be very good for the state, but I don't personally have an opinion one way or the other at this point. It's law.
Yes, Senator Bates?
I'm having a real hard time hearing it.
Sure.
A little closer? Okay.
It's pretty soft-spoken anyway.
Yeah. It's an obligation of the commission to deal with these. There are rules and regulations that regulate as to whether they're given out, and I would assume that as a commissioner I would follow the law in that regard. And it's up to the legislature to decide whether it's a good program or not.
Further questions? Senator Farriola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We wrestled mightily with the definition of a word that we hear in connection with water quality, air quality, and green industries, and that word is sustainability. What does that mean?
That, as you know, I have been serving on the state sustainability board, and even as board members, we struggle with what that term comes to mean. But I think, in general, my own general feeling is that it means that we do our very best to look at all the various impacts that might come from something we're going to do. Social impacts, economic impacts, and environmental impacts, and attempt to balance those so that we fairly take into account all of the implications of what we do. In other words, we don't try to give balance just to the environmental side, but we also look at the social and the economic implications of whatever we do. So sustainability is the attempt to try to find that balance point between those three kind of competing issues.
How well do you think we do at it?
I think as a state we do better than virtually any other state in the country, maybe any other state, but we have a long ways to go to do as well. We tend to go way one direction or the other. We tend to either give too much to economics and forget the environmental and social, or we give it to the environmental and not the economic and social. I think Oregon, at least what I like about Oregon, is at least we struggle with the question openly. In a lot of places, they don't even talk about it. So are we doing a great job? No. But are we trying? Yes, we are trying.
Madam Chairman, that's probably the closest that I've heard so far to, and I appreciate the discussion. I've never seen anybody that looks at those three concentric circles and doesn't view them sort of through a fisheye lens. You know, we see we tend to see one out of balance all the time, and I'm just hoping that we can take a step back from our own personal agenda and look at the bigger picture. But I appreciate the answers that I got this morning.
Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Bill, for volunteering to service. I think previous questions indicate this is a pretty emotional commission that you're sitting on. I'd just like to point out a couple things, and just for the record, is that, you know, in this last month or so, Portland and this area has had 13, 14, 15 inches of rain. Well, in my part of the country, which in Pendleton, which is supposed to be one of the more wetter parts, we've had 3, maybe 4 inches of rain. Water quality, water quantity is a huge issue for us. And, you know, just part of the education that goes back and forth between both of us. The population trends and migration trends are indicating that Oregon is going to continue to grow. I saw someplace where there was an EPA estimate that was this whole region, Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia, is going to grow by 30 million people in the next 50 to 100 years. And if we're going to do anything, we're going to have water. And so at least I'm always, as long as I'm involved in this business or in this part of the thing, if we're going to fund education and take care of our health care and do the public safety things, we're going to have industry and economics. I mean, we're going to have people with jobs in order to pay those taxes. I don't think our tax system is going to change. The voters don't seem to be willing to do that. And so I'm just asking you, as a member of the Environmental Quality Commission, to always bring forth that viewpoint that, you know, this is, in the name of quality of life, I think we're destroying quality of life. For lots of people, and so this, and I appreciate your answers to Senator Farioli's questions, because I think that's very honest. I mean, we're going to continue to strive for many, many things. Thank you.
Well, I do appreciate your point, and I, as you know, I was on the Water Resources Commission for 6 years, and we struggled with the water quantity issue mightily, especially on the east side of the Cascades, which is where it's the worst. But also the coast has major problems. So I'm very mindful of those issues.
We would share some of our rainfall with you right now. Some of us are getting really tired of it. Let me tell you, Senator Nelson.
In fact, I wrote out one of those things to Harry Gordy, you know, water everywhere, not a drop to drink. Yeah. Why don't we use some of the water that you guys are flushing down at the mouth of the Columbia, send it over to us in Oregon, Eastern Oregon.
Senator Bates, any questions?
No, he's covered it well. Thanks.
Thank you. And congratulations on your new grandbaby.
Oh, well, thank you. It's delightful to have her.
Good. I'm glad. I was going to say he's personally responsible for growing Oregon's population numbers. So.
Well, indirectly. I mean, I didn't do it. Let the record show.
Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
She needs to be on the phone.
Exactly.
Okay. We're going to hook up Nancy Grant. In the operating room. Exciting. ER and West Wing coming together in one conference call.
She also increasing the population.
Yes. Not directly. Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, Dr. Grant.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today. On the phone, a conference call with you is Senator Alan Bates from Ashland Medford area. Senator Betsy Johnson is here in the committee room. Senator Farrioli stepped out for a minute, but I'm sure he'll be back. Myself and Senator Dave Nelson from Pendleton. And you're being piped not only to a fairly packed room of folks, but throughout the Capitol. So just for your information.
Okay, thank you.
We really appreciate it. We know you're on a tight schedule this morning. Could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and then in particular why you would like to serve on this particular board?
Yes. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Nancy Grant from Portland. I've been an obstetrician and gynecologist in private practice in Oregon for 8.5 years. I recently served on a state committee to update the rules governing freestanding birth centers in Oregon. Through that experience, I came to appreciate the fact that women in Oregon want a choice about who provides their obstetric care. I believe these women also deserve quality care, and that the state has a duty to ensure that licensed providers of obstetrics meet a certain standard of care. The State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery serves to maintain the safety of an important obstetric option for women in Oregon. And to that end, I would be honored to serve as the medical director for the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Apparently no one, including myself, has any questions. We appreciate your willingness to serve.
I do have one. Okay. Actually, I became a grandfather here not long ago, and our son and daughter-in-law had a midwife, which was just an amazing experience from my viewpoint. I wasn't involved in it, but just the fact of how they went through the whole process, and it just fit them perfectly. I mean, it was just a great combination of, you know, medical care and the patients. And so I've come to have a greater appreciation of the things that you're advocating for.
I think it's that it can be very meaningful to a woman in her life, and it's important for that reason.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate your... yes?
Just
Dr. Bates.
A quick comment, if I could.
Sure.
Dr. Grant?
Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm also a physician here in Southern Oregon. I appreciate what you're doing here. Taking on the role of medical director for this group has certain responsibilities involved, as you well know. And I appreciate Commissioner stepping up to do it. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
All right. I think you're off the hook. We'll let you get back to your surgery, and we really appreciate you joining us.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. All right. Our next call is to North Carolina. The wonders of modern technology. And James. Because we couldn't do it without him.
That's really like the baby born here in Oregon.
Yeah, actually, Washington.
Okay. Was she a direct entry? I'm assuming she, most of the midwives, or she was a direct entry midwife?
Well,
I don't know.
I don't
okay.
know. What is it?
Okay. I'll talk to you about it afterward.
Yeah, okay. I need a little education here.
Your wife should probably. Isn't your wife a nurse?
Yeah.
Okay. There are a number of different kinds, and I don't know what Washington's rules are, but in the early 90s, mid-90s, we approved direct entry status.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Washington's... A number of midwives happen to be now nurse-midwife combos. This
our daughter-in-law left our dinner table at 5 o'clock on Christmas Eve. Had the baby at 11:30. Was back in Pendleton at 8 o'clock in the morning, back at the dinner table the next night.
That's a brave woman.
How did this happen? Well, what have you done in the last 24 hours?
Is it a girl or a boy?
It's a girl.
Great. That's
a great experience, yeah.
Good. Okay. Who are we calling, Madam Chair?
We are calling Mr. Demarest and Senator Walker. So it's a... I can't even make a joke about that.
Three people on the phone.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mr. Demarest?
Yes.
Thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes.
I believe on the phone are Senators Vicki Walker. Hello?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Senators Alan Bates.
Good morning.
At the dais, we're joined by Senator Betsy Johnson
Senator Farioli stepped out for a minute, but I suspect he'll be back. Me and Senator Dave Nelson, you are being you are in front of a very crowded room full of folks, and you are being taped throughout the Capitol. So, Mr. Demers, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on the Oregon Investment Council?
Certainly. First, let me start by thanking the committee for their indulgence to appear on the telephone. As I hope you know, I'm attending a meeting of our top managers throughout the world in North Carolina. This is a meeting that's scheduled annually at this time and was scheduled a year in advance. And so I appreciate the understanding that I would have been able to attend in person. With regards to your question, I guess number one, point out that this wasn't an appointment that I sought. It was one where I was approached by the governor asking me whether it was something I'd be interested in, be willing to do, which I told him that I would. The reason that that I'd be willing to accept such an appointment is that, number one, I do, and you might be able to tell from my background, I believe that public service is something that's important and something that I believe in trying to do over my career. And then maybe more to your point, I think my background is such that it would lend well to the council. You know, I've got over 40-year history in financial and business matters and advise numbers of clients about financial matters, acquisitions, divestitures, and second half of my career have been more directly involved in making acquisitions for our own company and divestitures, and so I have what I would say is a strong financial and business background. And I'm also at the point in my career where I have the time to devote to this kind of responsibility. So hopefully that's responsive to your question.
Thank you, it is. And that was my concern, is whether you had the time and energy to devote to this very important council.
Well, I certainly feel I do. I know I have the energy. Like I said, I'm at a point in my career where, with regards to my business, a large part of it is delegated to people that run the divisions within our company. And so consequently, I don't do the traveling I used to do. And as a matter of fact, I looked over the agenda or the scheduled meeting dates and don't have a conflict with any of those meeting dates. So I know I'll at least be in town for the meetings.
Great. Thank you very much. Senator Johnson, any questions?
I do not, other than to comment how much I appreciated, and I'm sure Oregonians did, Mr. Demarest's willingness to step in as the chair of the OMSI board during what it was arguably the most perilous time in that much-beloved institution's history, and I think helped bring OMSI back from the brink of financial collapse. And so, noting from your resume your extensive record of public service, that one stands out. OMSI is a cherished Oregon institution, and I thank you for your public service there.
Oh, you're welcome. It was my privilege.
I just second Senator Johnson's comments. That was an excellent job.
And I'll third because OMSI's in my district. questions from the phone panel. Senator Bates?
Yes, thank you.
Senator Walker?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I actually have a series of questions since none of us seem to be able to see each other. Could I just have leave to ask those?
I'll let you proceed at this time.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Demarest, your former firm that you worked for many years, Arthur Anderson, was the auditor for both PGE and Enron prior to their merger, and I believe you were the managing partner during that time.
Well, during that time, PGE wasn't owned by Enron, but you're right, we were the auditors for PGE.
Right. So a big lesson in the demise of Arthur Anderson was the importance of accountants staying in the accounting area and not venturing into unrelated areas that included investments. And, you know, although there's new rules established by the new Accounting Oversight Board, which is part of Sarbanes-Oxley, CPAs are allowed to be involved in investment matters, but still, this is only if they obtain the professional certification to do so. So my question to you is, have you obtained any, given your background in accounting, have you obtained any such professional certifications in the investment area that would demonstrate you have knowledge in that area?
No, I don't have any professional certification in the investment area, and I guess I would point out that when I was with Anderson, their involvement in the investment, formal investment, as I think of it in terms of investment management and investment banking, was not part of their portfolio.
Okay, thank you. My next question, if I might.
Please proceed.
And Mr. Demarest, the Oregon Investment Council has significant number of conflicts of interest problems during the last 2 years, resulting in two of the council members being discharged or resigning, Jerry Bidwell and Diana Goldschmidt. Specifically, have you had any business relationships with current or recent council members, including Mr. Bidwell and Ms. Goldschmidt in the last 2 years?
No, I would say I don't know that I ever have known Mr. Bidwell and Mrs. Goldschmidt. I think I met once, well before she was married.
Okay, thank you. My next question. The most recent council member, Ms. Katie Durant, has not confirmed she is a resident of Oregon for tax purposes, given that her husband, a real estate developer, Gordon Sondland, is a resident of Washington. So my question of you, Mr. Demarest, is are you a resident of Oregon for tax purposes?
I certainly am a resident of Oregon. As a matter of fact, I recently had a grandson born at Emanuel Hospital, which makes us four generations of people born at Emanuel Hospital.
Well, good for you.
Lifelong resident.
No direct entry midwife was there, I bet.
All right, thank you. I have another question, please.
Please proceed.
Mr. Demarest, Columbia Forest Products is a private firm. Yet if you were confirmed, I believe that FERS participants, the Public Employees Retirement System, is entitled to know a little bit more about what the CEO of Columbia really means, because as you know, on the investment council, you will be handling billions of dollars in state assets on behalf of HERS. So my question to you is, are you willing to identify your top five customers and suppliers in addition to your gross revenues, net income, and state corporate income tax paid in the last 2 years? And the final part of that question is, do you do business with any of the private equity, real estate, or other firms that the council is invested in?
Well, let me answer the last question first, if it's the easiest, and the answer is no. With regards to revealing, as you pointed out, information about our private company with regards to profitability and taxes paid, not only customers. Not only am I not in a position to specifically respond to your question, it's not something that I think would be appropriate for me to answer.
Okay, all right, I appreciate that. My final question, Madam Chair.
Senator Walker.
Thank you. Mr. Demarest, while you were the managing partner of Arthur Andersen, the firm worked with many private equity firms, including KKR, on many pretty big deals. These included the buyout of the Red Lion Inns and Medford Plywood. Looking back on those deals, although they produced satisfactory returns for PERS, who had invested in many of these deals, it left the state quite void of Oregon headquartered companies and remaining employees with gutted pensions. And, you know, a prime example of that would be Medford Plywood. It was an outstanding Medford-based employer with a policy of sustained yield and cutting trees. But the firm was stripped to the bone. They hired an actuary to revalue the pension plan and booked all of this to new net income. So, you know, my concern is if you look back on that work while you were managing partner, should Oregonians and PERS employees believe that you will have their best interests at heart and that you won't look at peeling off assets of pension plans to boost corporate bottom line?
Well, let me give you a simple answer to the question, and that would be to say that they could count on me to do my best to protect their assets. However, in the preamble to your question, I don't know who's giving you your information. I don't know that I remember who Medford Plywood was, and I certainly don't think that KKR acquired. There was a Medford Corporation. It wasn't acquired by KKR. So unless you're talking about Medford Corporation, I don't know who Medford Plywood was. And with regards to KKR in general, from a national perspective, the Red Lion, I think I'm pretty sure on this, was the only Anderson KKR client. All the rest were handled by Deloitte & Touche.
Okay. All right, thank you. I appreciate the answers to my questions. So, Madam Chair, I did notice that Mr. Demarest did not fill in a portion on his form on the first page where he indicates he's applied to the Oregon Investment Council and then he does not list any position requirements. I believe there are some position requirements. My file on that is at the Capitol. Would any of you have any knowledge about that?
Thank you, Senator Walker. The statutory qualifications are set forth in our overview that Ms. Taylor provided. I don't know if you have a copy.
I do not.
Okay. Five members appointed to four-year terms, one member who serves on the PERS board, three appointed by the governor who qualify by training and experience in investment or finance and hold no other public office. That would be Demarest, Durant, and Solomon, which appointment we're not dealing with today.
Mm-hmm.
The state treasurer, Edwards, obviously. Director of PERS, that's Cleary. Members may not be appointed to more than two full terms in any 12-year period. And a member may not serve as chairperson of the council for more than 4 years in any 12-year period.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Those last 2 points were my bills from the last session, so I'm glad to see those now as part of the requirements. All right, that would be all my questions. I appreciate your indulgence. Thank you, Mr. Demmer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Senator Bates.
I just have a quick follow-up there to him, all right. I think that Senator Walker was talking about the company we commonly call Medco down here, Medco Corporation.
Right.
And that really was an issue in which, to my memory, and Mr. Demmer, maybe you could help here, in which a corporate raider basically came in and spoke with the company and anything she's talking about didn't in fact occur. However, my guess would be that your involvement was probably more as an accountant in this. Could you give us a little insight into that if you're comfortable doing so?
Well, yeah, thanks for refreshing my memory because Medco, I think, was acquired by an individual that owned a company in Texas that I've long, forgotten his name. I didn't have any personal involvement in that transaction, and no, I guess I'd say my knowledge of it is non-existent, and I don't know that our firm would have had anything to do with it because it was an acquisition by an out-of-state company, and so I don't know if we were involved at all.
Okay, thank you. The case was one in which Dr. Walker's talked about is about what happened. It's been a sort of a black mark down here ever since, mm-hmm. But my guess is that you weren't directly involved, and I appreciate that. I appreciate you making that clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Walker, if you'll stay on, we'll move on to Mr. Garrett's appointment. Mr. Demarest, we really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join us today via phone and look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So he just hang up.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Garrett,
come on up.
She's still there. Sarah Walker, you still there?
I am. Thank you.
Great. Mr. Garrett, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to be the head of the Oregon Department of Transportation?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, it's a privilege to be here. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank the governor for appointing me as acting director.
Madam Chair, I can't hear Mr.
Okay. Pretend it's an ice cream cone.
And the confidence that my commission has shown in me, this is quite an honor, and it's extremely humbling. I bring to the conversation a huge amount of enthusiasm with a good pinch of anxiety. I think that makes me human. I think you've had the opportunity to read my background. I think I'm well-positioned because I've had the opportunity to gain an understanding and a wisdom of how relationships and how business is conducted at the federal level. Had the opportunity to work with Senator Marco Hatfield back in his Washington, D.C. office, where I worked policy issues as well as appropriation issues. It also gave me the opportunity to start working with the 9 federally recognized tribes in the state of Oregon, so developing those relationships that I still continue to cherish. Moving from the senator's office to the Oregon Department of Transportation, I've had the opportunity to work in several levels. The first coming into the agency as the local government liaison, working with our cities and counties, understanding that dynamic, as well as building relationships throughout the state of Oregon. Moving into the director's office, bird's eye view of how policy is created. And working with state legislators as we move concepts forward in the conversation. I took a step, moved to the Portland metropolitan region as the Region 1 manager, overseeing the activities of about 600 good folks of ODOT in the 5-county area of Columbia, Washington, Multnomah, Clackamas, and Hood River. What this did was allow me to engage with the communities, the citizens. This is where I think my private experience in business, growing up in a family business, certainly understanding customer service, understanding constituent service, both with the senator's office and the Oregon Department of Transportation, truly played itself out. The region is where we breathe life into these policy documents, to be very honest with you, engaging the good folks in neighborhoods, the various jurisdictions as we work these things. I think with that understanding, with that wisdom and that experience, but probably more importantly, the relationships that I have formed at those 4 levels of government, I could add the regional government of Metro as well. So 5 levels of government for all intents and purposes. I think I'm well positioned to engage in this opportunity. I think finally I'm from ODOT. I understand the culture. I understand the changes that have taken place. The direction and the vision that the legislature has allowed us to move into new areas in terms of public-private partnership, in terms of huge investments. How do we accommodate as an agency? We've made some structural shifts. I understand why we've made those realignments, and I understand that evolution has made us a healthier organization. I think with that, I think I'm well equipped to step up and fulfill the functions as director of the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Thank you. Senator Johnson, any questions?
I don't, other than to comment that all through Matt's service or Mr. Garrett's service at ODOT, he's had a portion of my legislative district under his portfolio, and I have rarely dealt with a state agency person who is as responsive. It is not unusual that I have phone calls returned at 9 o'clock at night as he's finishing up his call list. I have raised issues of concern in a rural Columbia County that during the time Mr. Garrett was the head of Region 1 that were met with the same degree of importance and concern as issues in Metro Portland. Columbia County is in that unique position of being part of Region 1, but we still are quite rural. And I have been impressed at how seriously he's taken concerns that I have raised with him that are completely foreign to downtown Portland. And I have appreciated the staff responsiveness, the good customer service that you mentioned, and I have appreciated your sensitivity to the difference between the needs of rural Oregon and what would commonly be considered Region 1, the Portland metro area.
Thank you. Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If the nominee is lucky enough to be confirmed in this process and on the Senate floor, I would invite him to come and meet with a few folks in two of the regions that are represented in District 30. Introduce him to a couple of case studies and some folks that have pretty strong opinions about how the agency's been operating, and maybe a few suggestions for redirecting it.
Chairman Brown, Senator Ferriello, I look forward to those conversations. And what I have promised the good folks of ODOT is I won't sit behind a desk in Salem and try to run the organization. I think it's incumbent upon me to travel the state just to have those type of conversations, not only with my own folks, but also with the good folks that we serve. So I will take you up on that, and we'll follow up. If indeed I am confirmed, we'll do that.
Thank you. Sarah Nelson?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Your regional director out in our part of the country, Monty Grove, just does a great job. A lot of times he calls me and says, you can expect a constituent telephone call, which I really appreciate. So I'm prepared. So I don't know where that culture came from and all this whole thing. From our viewpoint, when we get complaints and about various agencies, it's really nice to be able to have that working relationship. And if you can continue to encourage that amongst your regional directors, at least that's very I mean, it's one of the nicest surprises I may have found in dealing with the agencies in my district.
Chair Brown, Senator Nelson, I can assure you that transparency, that turnaround time is incumbent. The bottom line is we don't want to surprise anybody. That ripples down from my commission. We had a director and Mr. Warner that I think he wrote that in stone, to be very honest. Do not surprise anyone. That's just dealing with people, straightforward conversations. We are a big organization made up of great people. But we will stumble every so often, and we have to have the open communications, and I think clearly making sure that a legislator whose constituents have been impacted one way or the other has a background and understanding what may come at him or her. So we'll continue that, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bates?
Yes.
Any questions for Mr. Garrett?
No, none at all. Thank you.
All right. Senator Walker?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'd like to reach out if there are any questions.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Garrett. Good morning. And let me ask you right off the bat, how large of an agency is ODOT compared to other state agencies?
We have about 4,600 employees at ODOT, and we make up about 10% of the budget for the state of Oregon. So we're a significant agency within the scheme of things.
Okay, thank you. My second question is, as you know, the 2001 legislature under Governor Kitzhaber funded and authorized OPIA 1 and 2. And under this governor in 2003, the legislature authorized OTIA 3, which deals with our failing and aging bridges. In fact, it's my understanding, it's about $2.5 billion over 10 years. And I believe we've paid for those bonds, and this legislature increased title fees and registration fees to help repay those bonds. Is that correct?
That's correct. There was also, we used some existing program funds from our modernization account as well as our bridge fund to add to the new revenues that was generated by title fees and such.
Okay, thank you. And so what doesn't go into OTIA 3, for the bridge repair from those increased title and registration fees goes to cities and counties for maintenance and preservation of local roads. Is that correct?
That's correct. $361 million.
Okay, thank you. So my next question gets to, I'm pretty interested in the OTIA 3 program. Let me ask you this, Mr. Garrett, since you've been at the agency for a while and you're probably intimately familiar with it, should the people of Oregon be satisfied with the progress that's been made to date on the bridge repair?
I think they should. The timing is such that this is an evolution. We have learned to conduct business in a new environment. And as we've evolved, the private sector has evolved with us as well. We continue to grow a healthy relationship. I would argue that as we broke from the gate, there were some issues. We didn't do it quite fast enough. But again, we were growing a brand new program, trying to meet the challenges that came with such a substantial investment to deal with the cracked bridges. I would also say that as we continue to move forward in that line, we also wanted to better inform the conversation. We were conservative in our approaches as we were diagnosing these cracked bridges. Bottom line, safety was paramount in our conversation. But we engaged the good folks at Oregon State University and had them work with us to, and these are my words, I'm not sure the engineers back at ODOT would appreciate this, but we came up with a diagnostic tool that we applied to these bridges. That took a little bit of time, but it better informed the conversation of how we were going to replace, repair, and invest in these type bridges. That said, there's a confidence. We are delivering the bridge program. If you look at the OTA 1 and 2, the stage 1, again, the OTA 3 bridge package is broken up into 5 stages, the first being securing an east-west north-south route along 26 and 20 and 97. We want to make sure we can move. Yes.
Dr. Bates? Sarah Bates?
Yes.
Anything you say, we pick it up here.
Sorry.
Just so you know, if you can use hand signals or whatever, that'd be great.
So I got the 5 stages and then the rest.
Five stages. Again, the first stage is to make sure we secure routes that will allow commerce to continue to flow east, west, north, and south, because then we're turning our attention to the interstates, I-5 and I-84 in the subsequent stages, and then various other highways. The bottom line, if you look at stage one alone, 15 of 22 bridges are completed. We are moving to deliver the OTA package. I think people should have confidence that the agency is being good stewards of their dollars. We have recreated the way we have delivered. We are innovative in our approach, and we are working very closely with the private sector folks to grow this into the way we continue to do business into the future. We are healthier because of it.
Sarah Walker, I'm going to ask a follow-up on that along those lines. So is it fair to say, Mr. Garrett, that the private sector has been more involved with OTA 3 than it has been with 1 and 2? Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement.
Do you have a sense of how they compare in terms of cost effectiveness?
Don't have it. That's a conversation that's playing itself out. We'll be better informed which is the best investment to work, the in-house type activities versus the outsourcing. That's a conversation that's playing itself out as we speak. We don't have the answers to that yet.
Okay. Sarah Walker.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, because I wanted to get into that issue. And it alarms me a little bit when Mr. Garrett says we've been good stewards of their dollars, but just because of some information I have, but let me ask a couple of questions. Mr. Garrett, are you satisfied with the level of oversight over FLUR, I believe that's how you pronounce it, FLUR/HDR? They're the folks who are in charge of the Oregon Bridge Delivery Partners Program.
Senator, I think it's fair to say that I think we can do better. That relationship, again, we were in a whole new environment. I've had some concerns. I've shared some thoughts with the folks overseeing those activities. Bottom line, how we treat our Oregon firms, how they engage and conduct business with our firms, there's been some information that's floated back my way that is a little worrisome. I've shared that conversation. So, again, it was a new program. The charges were enormous, and I think we have to make sure we understand the context of the charge to deliver this program. But that said, the way we conduct business, I've had some concerns, and I've shared those concerns with, the folks that are overseeing the activities, and hopefully the relationship is getting better, not only between the good folks of HDR and FLURS and ODOT, but also that bridge delivery unit and the Oregon firms are actually constructing and delivering these bridges.
Senator Walker.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Gare, what do you think the people of Oregon should think about the departure of Oregon's Director of Transportation and the staffer that was closest to the Bridge Partners program at a very early stage in the process? Do you think that was coincidence, that they just found better jobs, or do you think there was something going on?
Well, Senator, I can answer the first one. I think Director Warner had a great opportunity up in the Portland metro area as the Executive Director of the Portland Development Commission. He's got his hands full.
I was going to say, Mr. Garrett, with all due respect, opportunity is a very pleasant word.
Opportunity, challenges.
We're thinking the same thing, Madam Chair. I live in Eugene, and I know about the Portland Development Commission.
But I can tell you the skill sets, the attributes, the values of Mr. Warner will do very well in rebuilding that organization. I get, Senator, I'm not sure the second person we're talking about. Are we talking about the former chief of staff? Are we talking about the person in the bridge section that's overseeing those activities, moving to?
There's some shakeup of some chief personnel in the bridge partner program that did oversee those activities.
I think, Senator, we had a woman who actually was overseeing those activities that again migrated to the private sector. I don't know if those are greener pastures or not. That's for her to decide, I guess. So.
Okay. So, I guess from your long answer to my first, one of my first questions about whether Oregonians should be satisfied with progress, I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the effectiveness of this program so far versus your expectation with the legislature-approved funding levels?
Yeah, I guess scale of 1 to 10, let's give it a 7, knowing that we can continue to improve each and every day. It was a brave new world. We were learning. We were building a substantial program from the ground up. There were fits and starts, to be very honest with you. But I think the bottom line, Senator, what I would like to communicate is the people of Oregon should have confidence in the Oregon Department of Transportation. There is a transparency. There's a clarity. That's going to be the foundation of what, if indeed I'm confirmed, the director's office will be all about. We will bring integrity to our conversation. So obviously growing a new program, much to learn. Avenues that we still have to exhaust. So more to come, more to learn.
So my final question, Mr. Garrett, is, I'm all about transparency and openness in government, and I get the sense that you are too. So you're very concerned about where that taxpayer dollar is going, and as are we. And the reason I pointed out that the bonding came from increased registration and title fees. It's because every Oregonian in the state is putting money up to have this program put in place, and counties or cities are counting on getting their fair share, and when they don't, they go to their local taxpayers and hit them again for money to make up shortfalls. So, Ms. Garrett, I just want to make sure that the oversight is in place, that the money is being spent properly, that there's full accountability for it, and then you're willing to take your job on the answers you gave me today.
Senator, I am, and please believe me, I understand the gravity of the conversation that's playing itself out. I understand the gravity of this position. Bottom line is the department is a good investment, and I tell people just look at the projects that are playing themselves out throughout the state of Oregon. We are investing your money well. We have folks that care very deeply about the transportation system as a whole working for the Oregon Department of Transportation. I will do everything I can to make sure that we expend the money in the most appropriate way, we maximize our investments, and we position ourselves for additional conversations. In no way do I want the confidence in this agency diminished one iota. As a matter of fact, I want to continue to strengthen and build where we are today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Garrett. And, Madam Chair, I appreciate your honest answers to my question and to all of my questions. And Oregonians appreciate your customer service, as Senator Johnson pointed out, because if we can't keep the customers happy, then it's very hard for us to go back and ask them for money to help continue these services. So, Mr. Garrett, I'm going to hold you to these answers, and I look forward to learning more about the problems I know about and you obviously know about, and hopefully the rest of the world will know about. So thank you very much.
Senator, I appreciate your questions.
I have a couple of questions. ODOT and the Transportation Commission have started looking at toll roads. Could you talk to me about how you're going to engage the public in that decision-making process?
Chair Brown, that's an excellent question. It is an opportunity that we are at the cusp now with public-private partnership, another direction and vision that came from the legislature. Traditional mechanisms, because the needs just far outstrip the existing revenues, we're going to have to look for innovative financing mechanisms. Tolling is a possibility. They are feasible. There are a couple projects that may play themselves out where there is opportunity to at least put the tolling conversation on the table. Many policy questions will stem from it. I think at the end of the day, we have to pose the question, is the need or the project compelling enough for us to walk down the avenue of innovative finance or tolling? The public will tell us that. If not, they may say, we still want the project. The project is compelling. We don't want to go tolling. We may have to come back to gas tax or fees. We have a robust conversation that will be engaged with the general public. They will be the barometers of whether we go forward or not. We know it's feasible. We have some very smart folks informing this discussion. We also know it's a surgical tool. It's not a blunt instrument. And it will be applied to specific projects to take advantage of that. So we're on the cusp of the conversation as a whole, and follow-up with that is an extremely aggressive and robust conversation with the public.
Okay. Senator Johnson?
Thank you. I'm going to change subjects.
That's fine.
Mr. Garrett, assuming that you're confirmed, I'd like you to comment for the record on how your administration at ODOT is going to treat the area commissions on transportation and what role you see those local advisory groups playing in informing your administrative policies as well as informing commission deliberations.
Chair Brown, Senator Johnson, this is an excellent question. Again, when I came on to the agency, it's when the first two area commissions on transportation were actually birthed, and I've seen them grow and mature through the conversations. They are invaluable. The insights, the collective wisdom that those good folks bring to the conversations brings a focus, it brings a discipline, it makes, I think, me much more comfortable that we are making strategic investments and strategic decisions based on this collective wisdom that comes to the table. I will run them hard and put them away wet. I think they are outstanding organizations, and I will use them, and I will meet with those good folks. They represent the good folks, their turf. They understand the dynamic and activity out there. I need that to better inform our conversation and decisions.
I'm very pleased to hear you say that. Our act, the Northwest Act, is one that I've been very closely involved with, and I see it as a pretty high-performing act in no small measure because of the contributions of the ODOT folks out in the region, Carol Richardson and that office in Astoria. I have watched them dealing with finite amounts of money, having to make decisions about where to apply that money, and actually one county waiting purposefully while another county goes ahead and finishes a project, and working that kind of competitive desire for both projects out at the local level. And it is my observation that the work product of the acts should be and could be extremely valuable to your office as well as the commission. So I'm glad to hear your answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
These questions have obviously been prompting more. Senator Nelson, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Technology Committee, which met yesterday, the sense I'm getting is that your agency isn't going to stand out there alone. You're going to have to be working with a lot of other agencies. We're with the potential new director of DAS coming in. One of the things that we talked about yesterday, and one of the things I'm going to promote, is a pilot project for intelligent traffic management. Is that the right word?
Yes, ITS.
I mean, I think that one of the biggest problems we have is in the Portland area with congestion, moving traffic around. I mean, I'm all about economic development. That's how we're going to raise taxes or to pay for our public services. And I see that as one of our biggest problems. I'm going to promote a project that starts at the Jansen Street exit on the Columbia River and going south as far as the money will take us. Maybe it's $1 million just to see what we can actually do. And I don't know, have you guys talked about that? Or could you?
No, Chair Brown, Senator Nelson, you're spot on. I mean, it's the challenge is, again, of an urban transportation system. We need to maximize all opportunities. And in this operationals type thing, that's kind of where this intelligent transportation system, the application plays itself out in spades. It does two things. It gains a little bit of capacity because you're empowering the folks to make decisions, because you're informing them. I think we've been very aggressive in terms of our trip chat, our website, where people actually can get on the computer and they can look and see the travel route that they're going to take, whether it's congested or not, and look for detour routes. Our variable message signs, again, alerting people to problems or just telling folks, hey, it's about a 12-minute ride from the Wilsonville area to Highway 26. Again, empowering folks, having them make the decisions. Our ramp meters, gaining a little bit of capacity, better flow on our interstates. No, you were spot on in making that investment, because I think those type of investments gain us capacity on the cheap, so to speak, because widening some of the highways within the Portland metropolitan metropolitan area, that's an enormous task, and sometimes just the geology of the area prevents it. So it's a good investment, I think.
Thank you. A couple of final questions, I hope. when OTIA 3 was passed, the bill contained language regarding a waiver of contracting requirements for certain contracts or classes of contracts. Do you know whether any of these requirements have been waived for any contractors?
Senator, I don't. I don't have the specifics on that.
All right. One final question, affirmative action.
Yes.
We have a state policy. Could you tell us a little bit about your philosophy in terms of diversifying the employment practices, hiring practices of the agency?
Chair Brown, this is extremely important. I have the privilege of working on this on a couple different levels, but I will tell you that if indeed confirmed, I want you to know what I see in this area. I want to make sure the Oregon Department of Transportation reflects the quality of individuals throughout the state of Oregon. That means people of character and integrity, people of color, women. We need that collective wisdom to come in and, again, better inform our conversations. This is an area where my agency can do better. There is no question about it. And I think we're starting that on two different levels. The first level is our outreach. We have been very passive. People had to come to us. I think there's a great opportunity to work at the Department of Transportation just because of the breadth and depth of what we do, be it highway, be it rail, be it safety. There's some heady careers at the agency. But we've been somewhat passive letting people come to us. We are now actually engaging folks in their community, whether it be the African-American community, the Latino community, trying to expose and allow access to this organization. So we will be much more aggressive on the HR side of recruiting. We're also going to work with the folks that we have, the minority and people of color and women. How do we retain them? Are we creating the appropriate atmosphere? We need to ask those questions, and I think we have some new folks in our human relations department that are well equipped for this conversation. Something that I personally had a hand in that I'm very proud of, watched at birth, is part of the OTIA package, had a direction to grow and diversify the work pool with these huge volumes that will play themselves out. We don't have enough horses to deliver and carry the load here. So how do we attract people of color and women, small business, disadvantaged business, to take advantage of this opportunity? We have a workforce diversity plan that bloomed out of Salem. But again, we animated or we breathed life into it out in the region with the creation of the regional alliance where we brought existing apparatus together. Again, we're not trying to recreate the wheel. We're trying to complement the activities of the community-based organizations, our friends at employment, the labor forces. We're bringing, again, the whole consortium of folks, adding value to it because we have a need. We have some money we can forward to it. Using that existing apparatus, again, engaging those folks, saying, here's the opportunity. Come now. And let's grow the workforce. And I think through the OTIA 3 and our alliances, which will bloom statewide, we'll be much more aggressive on that front.
Thank you. No more questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Garrett. Sorry, Senator Bates, sorry.
Right. Sorry, just one quick comment and an answer if I could. The Southern Oregon area, especially Rogue Valley, is growing very, very rapidly. And the last 3 or 4 years, we've been in this position with MoDOT where we have seen a sea change as far as local control is concerned. North and South have for interchanges. The recent Home Depot situation with interchange in Phoenix, movement of a couple of precepting points for growing community there. We don't want to see that local control lost. We've been able to get answers quickly, usually at the local level. We worked through some difficult times of getting these projects funded and taken care of both by matching funds from various sources locally with ODOT. I'd like some reassurance that under your administration that with that kind of openness and local control will continue.
Chair Brown, Senator Bates, absolutely. I think the good folks of Medford have been leaders in this, or Medford, Ashland, the Rogue Valley have been leaders in this conversation. Again, going back to the issue that Senator Johnson broached, the Area Commissions on Transportation, really one of the, through TRADCO, the business associations in Jackson and Josephine County, we bloomed into an Area Commission down there. We have one of the best and the brightest at the agency in Paul Mather, who's the region manager, who leads a lot of good folks in the Rogue Valley. We need you to continue to be at the table. In terms of finance, but also in terms of the wisdom and the value you add to the overall transportation conversation. You have my commitment to engage vigorously the good folks down in the Rogue Valley.
Thank you. I've heard some rumbles about Paul being moved to Salem. We'd like to have a reassurance you're not going to do that,
Julie. That's Paul's decision. I'd like him up here, but he's doing a great job down there. I don't think he's coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you very much,
thank
Mr. Garrett.
Sir.
Anybody else on the phone? All right.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, here's the plan. Senator Nelson needs to leave at 9:30. I'm going to bring up the folks from the Commission for Women, Ms. Gray, Ms. Stefano, and on the phone, Ms. Wellenon, and then we're going to go into work session and try and get through those appointments that we've done so far so Senator Nelson can vote on them. Come on up. And then on deck, we've got Norm Smith, Trust for Cultural Development, then Judy Stigler, GSPC, and James Martin. So. Girls can come up. They can come up if you want. They can come up. That's fine. We've got an extra chair if they want to.
It's okay.
She's really
there. This is a pretty scary.
Okay. Isn't this how all people start the company?
Yes. All right.
Madam Chairman,
if
this
is
successful, I think most of our nominees will bring their children.
Well, it's certainly successful if you want to get your appointment heard earlier than later. Ms. Wallenon? Hello?
Baby, did you talk to her?
This is Stacey Wolfman.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have it way wrong. Thank you.
That's okay. You sound like you're having loads of fun over there.
We are. We are. I'm going to go ahead and get started with Ms. Gray, and then we'll come to you after we finish Ms. Stefano.
Please.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Reagan Gray. My name is Reagan Gray, and I am currently staff for Representative Rosenbaum. I've been working for her for the past 4 years. And I am desiring the appointment for the Commission for Women because I've had a long relationship with the Oregon Commission, starting with in college when I was a women's studies major at Portland State, which is where it's been housed, to my current position as a treasurer for the Friends of the Commission for Women, which is the 501c3 that's been charged with fundraising for it as it's been defunded for the past 3 years. And I believe that my long relationship with the Commission for Women and my current legislative experience would make me a strong candidate to serve on the commission. As a women's studies major, I have followed the positive contributions of the Commission for Women and its AmeriCorps program, which is called Communities in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children. I worked with the Commission and the AmeriCorps program in conjunction with my studies at the Women's Studies program at Portland State. And after graduating from Portland State, I was hired by Representative Rosenbaum and have been her legislative assistant and have staffed the Oregon Women's Health and Wellness Alliance, a job I still hold today. And during the 2003 and 2005 legislative sessions, the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance made funding for the advocacy commissions their one of their top priorities. And as a result, I've worked closely with the commission's ED on its fiscal survival for the past 3 years. And although we were unsuccessful in 2003, we were successful in 2005. We have a kind of new funding structure where we have one ED for all four of the advocacy commissions. And so I guess I believe that my relationship with the commission makes me a qualified candidate, and having worked with the commission during its recent instability, I'm interested in seeing the commission through its current transition with the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office, and I'm looking forward to the positive works of the commission in the future. Thank you for considering my appointment.
Thank you. Ms. Stefano, why don't you go ahead, and then we'll go to Ms. Waltman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anna Stefano, and I'm from Portland.
I am interested in this position because I believe that the mission and the value statement of the Oregon Commission for Women reflects my values and beliefs, to educate women about the issues which touch their lives and also to assist them in finding the resources that they need. My professional and volunteer work has been related to supporting and advocating for women. I feel that the knowledge and understanding of women's issues that I bring, as well as the eagerness to learn and meet women from across the state, will assist me in implementing the mission of the Oregon Commission for Women. And ultimately, I do it for my daughters so that they will have a better life.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Ms. Waltman.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Stacey Waltman. I'm in Bend, Oregon. I am an extreme advocate for women, and my energy and enthusiasm and hard work making a benefit to the commission, and I look forward to serving in that capacity. I know there are a lot of issues on the table right now, and I don't even pretend to understand them all at this point. So I come to the commission with an open mind and a lot of energy and understanding the needs of fostering good relationships in the community and hoping to transcend some of the obstacles that are facing women today. So I appreciate your consideration, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Johnson.
I have one, and I'm going to have it for all of the commissions, and that speaks, and I would invite an answer from all three of the nominees. It speaks to the question of the fundraising, and your attitude towards asking the people that are the beneficiaries of the commission's service and perceive the value of the commission's service as far as voting with their pocketbooks and supporting the work of the commissions. React a little bit, if you would, to fundraising plans and the way to solicit that kind of tangible expression of the value of the commission through people writing checks to support your work.
Well, we've been very lucky to have Rosalind Farrington, who was the previous executive director, who really set up the 501c3 and set up the mission for it, and the fundraising goals and some 4,000 voices for women. So we're pretty much continuing the work that she has done and started the data bank of people who are willing to contribute to the commission. I don't see an issue with raising money from women to help support women in Oregon. So.
I'm also a member of the Friends of the Commission, of the Oregon Commission for Women. And one other thing that we're doing is we're having house parties. Sort of a grassroots way of getting women to be part of the 4,000 Voices. And our first one is supposed to be in Salem soon. We're trying to organize that, but we're hoping to go throughout the state of Oregon and have house parties that that women will chair. So.
I think the best way to ask for money to support these issues is to communicate a clear message where there's a direct benefit received by the community. So I think that our job appears to be first and foremost getting the value expressed to the community so that giving money becomes easy.
Other questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Farrioli.
I see a gentleman accompanying one of the applicants in the back, and I just wondered if there was any relationship there.
That's not the answer you were looking for.
No, it is, Madam Chair. Okay. Exactly the answer, and I'm very pleased to see a supportive husband here at the confirmation hearing.
Thank you. And for the record, could you have your could you state your daughter's names, or if they want to state their names?
You want to tell me your name?
I'm Julia.
Julia, very nice to meet you, Julia.
And this is Amelia.
Amelia's yeah.
A little shy.
A little shy. And we think one of them lost their shoe under the table. I was at my law office yesterday, and somebody talked about all the stuff in the lost and found at all the schools, like how do kids lose one shoe? Like, do parents not notice when their kids come in? So, Senator Nelson, anything? Senator Bates, any questions? All right. Thank you all very much for joining us today. We appreciate your willingness to serve the state of Oregon.
Thank you
very thanks, much. You guys.
Thank you. You're too shy.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to close the public hearings on the last several committee hearings and open a work session on the Boards of Aviation, Commission on Environmental Quality, a Board of Direct Entry Midwifery, the Oregon Investment Council, and the Commission for Women. The chair would move forward, and we may pull out some of these appointments in the future, but at the time being, the chair would move forward on the following appointments. Would move Mr. R.P. Joe Smith to the Board of Aviation, Mr. Bill Blosser to the Environmental Quality Commission, Dr. Nancy Grant to the Board of Direct Entry Midwifery, Mr. Harry Demarest to the Oregon Investment Council, and Ms. Reagan Gray, Ms. Anna Stefano, and Ms. Stacy Waltman to the Commission for Women. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, I appreciate the your statement for the record that some of these appointments that are being voted in block today could appear on the floor as standalone appointments.
My goal is to avoid all of the separate appointments that we did last time that caused excruciating agony for some of the members. So, Senator Nelson, any further discussion? Would you please call the roll, James?
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Ferriola.
Aye.
Chair Brown. Chair votes aye. Motion carries. And we'll talk about carriers when we get to the end. Thank you, Senator Nelson, for joining us. We appreciate your busy schedule. Okay. Like to have go back to public hearings and invite up Mr. Norm Smith on the Trust for Cultural Development.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Would you tell us a little bit about yourself? Not that we all don't know everything about you, but tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular commission.
Well, Madam Chair, arts and culture, I guess, would be an avocation that each of us shares in our own way, but it's certainly an avocation of mine. Having been on an earlier governor's task force that was sort of the where the genesis, I think, of the Oregon Cultural Trust began, I have followed it and advocated for it for some time. I was honored to serve two terms on the Oregon Arts Commission and also as its chair, and have been off that commission for better than a year. But I still continue to yearn for the day that the vision for the Oregon Cultural Trust comes to fruition. And I know that it's been a challenge for each of you on this committee and all other members of the legislature to find a way to allow assets from the Treasury to go to this important project. I also, by way of background, practiced law for a number of years in Portland, and for the last almost 9 years have been with the Ford Family Foundation down in Roseburg, which does a small amount of funding in the arts and cultural area as well.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Senator Bates?
No questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. Ms. Stigler, come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning. Chair. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular commission?
As Senator Johnson said, are you insane? No. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Judy Stigler, and I, other than being asked and actually enthusiastically saying, yes, I would be happy to serve on this commission, I guess the rationale behind it would be that, number one, I've been involved in public service mostly in a voluntary way all my adult life. My husband has been involved in public service as a paid, elected, or government employee most of his adult life. And I believe both of us believe very firmly in accountability and transparency in public servants. I think our public deserves to know that the people who serve them either in a paid, elected, or voluntary way are abiding by the rules of ethics, are accountable, and are transparent in their service. And I am more than happy to help carry the banner.
Thank you very much. Questions from the panel? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you know, Ms. Stigler, right now under the aegis of the Oregon Law Commission, there is a pretty thoughtful review of some of the statutes that speak to ethical relationships between legislators and the lobby and legislators and other areas in their portfolio of responsibilities. Talk a little bit about your reaction to the... we've just started, so I'm not asking you had in-depth knowledge of what's going on. But mostly, just philosophically, your response to a refreshing of Oregon's ethics statutes and as a potential member of the commission, your reaction to having the law commission undertake a review of this run of statutes?
Well, first of all, I think it's been a substantial amount of time since they were thoroughly reviewed. I think they've been, as any body of law, they've been tinkered with over the years. So I think first and foremost, it never hurts. And particularly, I think, not only in the climate that Oregon finds itself with some of the more recent issues over the last couple of years that have occurred with legislators in particular, but also the national scene. And I think... first and foremost, I think it's a response to public perception that our public servants, whether they're paid, voluntary, or elected, are probably lower almost than pond scum. And I think we need to do anything and everything we can to assure the public that our public servants, whether they are paid, elected, or voluntary, are operating transparently and above board and very ethically. So I think that it's a wise decision by the Oregon Law Commission to... I think it's better done in that atmosphere than in the potentially heated atmosphere of a legislative session. I think it's more careful, more thoughtful when it's done in this manner.
Senator
They're
Bates?
Dropping like flies. No.
You have questions?
None. Thank you.
Thank you. And the chair has none as well. So I think there being no further questions, thank you very much for your appearance here. And
thank you,
Senator. We'll do these when the chair returns to go into work session. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Question.
Mr. Chair, during this break, I want to go back to the last appointment that we just did and clarify something for the record with your permission.
Without objection.
I noticed as I was sitting here the roster attached for the current board of the Cultural Trust, and I noted that my name was still listed on here. I am no longer a member of that group. Had I been, I would have called it to the attention of the panel, but I just want to make sure that that's corrected for the record.
Madam, I think that is not a problem. I see no particular conflict other than the fact that you were misinformed about your appointment. It was for life.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay, all right.
Mr. Merton. And, folks, after we've finished grilling you, you should feel free to leave.
Hi.
Good morning.
Chairperson Brown, members of the committee, appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My interest in the Oregon Patient Safety Commission dates back. I've been in human service, public service for 18 years. I won't further bore you with the details that are included in the nomination form, but the last 3.5 years, I have served as president of Goodwill Industries of Lane and South Coast Counties, which represents Lane, Coos, and Curry Counties, and understand the importance of volunteer efforts. The reason for my interest is there's really three reasons. One, I represent a constituency that is currently not represented on there, and that is a private purchaser of health care. Two, I represent a constituency that typically does not have a voice in health care and a lot of other issues as it relates to the individuals that Goodwill serves. And three, we have a number of individuals that we currently serve that through, in the future, if the Oregon Patient Safety Commission is successful, maybe we would have avoided some of the issues that have caused individuals to be a part of our program and that the reason that we're in existence. We have a number of individuals who, in my opinion, have come to us for help and assistance because of the unfortunate circumstances they had with a healthcare experience. So I understand the commitment of time necessary to be a value-added commission member. I have served Senator Kulongowski on the Oregon Disabilities Commission. I have served Indiana Governor Frank O'Bannon on the Indiana Disabilities Commission and also Indiana Governor Bayh on the Indiana Adult Literacy Coalition. So I understand the importance and the significance of serving on a commission and the time necessary and would welcome the opportunity with your support.
Thank you. Questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
As you might well guess, this is a commission I'm concerned about. If you would please update your comments on two things. One is the growing number of patient errors we're seeing, especially in the hospital settings. And two, the financial future of this organization. We were unable to get language changed, which actually was probably more of an error when we first set this corporation up, about funding for it, because it's based on a voluntary basis. So if you can't have comment on both those, if possible.
Relative to the first question, the Patient Safety Commission really is a volunteer as a result of the legislation. And your first question regarding errors, I believe the estimates, the conservative estimate is around 44,000 deaths annually as a result of medical errors, and maybe a more realistic estimate is upwards of 100,000 deaths a year, which, you know, in this country claims more lives than AIDS and breast cancer. So this is a real issue in this country, and Oregon is no exception to that. I believe that the voluntary process in Oregon, which is unique, Oregon is the only state that will have a purely voluntary program. And so far, I've met with Mr. Dameron, the administrator, and so far he has been successful in working on behalf of the commission to get hospitals on board. You know, I think there's the opportunity to be a part of it is one that is going to help, and I don't think there's a hospital of the 56 hospitals in Oregon right now. I don't think there's a hospital that agrees or that would disagree that the Patient Safety Commission is a good idea. I think it's just a way if there are hospitals, and there are none to my knowledge that are not embracing this, it's just a lack of knowledge of the benefits of reporting errors and how those reports will be handled.
Thank you. Senator Johnson?
No, I have no questions. That was a very thoughtful set of remarks. I appreciate it.
Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, thank you. I appreciate your comments, particularly because I, like all the other legislators in the building, get correspondence and emails from individuals who are concerned about hospitals as vectors for infectious diseases, and everything from those concerns to malpractice issues right to the issues of Tamiflu as a preservative in vaccines. So we run the spectrum of these issues that intersect with patient safety, and I'm really pleased that a private payer of insurance will be finally a member of this commission, should you be confirmed.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Bates, anything else?
Just real quick, yeah, I appreciate the answer. I appreciate the concern. I still have an underlying concern that in our hospital settings, especially, that we are not getting the root cause of errors that continue to occur. I'm not sure that the Patient Safety Committee can be the sole answer to this, but what I would like to hear at a later time is that the Safety Committee is really serious about getting information from hospitals, which hospitals may not be as comfortable as one might think sharing for medical malpractice reasons, for other reasons. I just have not seen a significant change from what I see in hospitals as far as safety is concerned. I see bricks and mortars. I see a tremendous amount of building going on. I see a decreasing number of nurses per patient. I see more confusion, more complexity, and I'm afraid this is going to lead to more errors, not less. We've got a lot of issues to deal with in a very difficult situation as medicine becomes more technical, and more complex, and I think the patients are left out yet. I'm not certain that we're moving in the right direction. So I want to make that clear. I appreciate your stepping up and being willing to work on a very difficult issue in our society, but I do want to make it clear that I am not at this time completely convinced that we're moving in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bates. Senator Bates, anything else? Thank you very much, Mr. Martin,
thank
for
you.
Joining us. We appreciate you jumping into the fire, so to speak, so shortly after moving to Oregon.
No problem. Thank you.
So.
All right. Next. I like last my last. Okay. All right.
I knew we had some. Mr. Dancy and Mr. I'm sorry, Vellandre?
Yes.
Vellandre. Well, Senator Starr would be proud that I'm a phonetic speller, but it doesn't always work with names. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Senator Bates?
Can I step off for about 10 minutes from right back in?
Sure.
I won't hang the phone up. I'll just put it on here.
Okay, good to know you weren't there. All right. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves and why you'd like to serve on the State Plumbing Board?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sky Dancy, and I'm from Lake Oswego, Oregon, and I'm here this morning seeking confirmation of the nomination to the professional engineering position on the plumbing board. I am a registered professional engineer in the state of Oregon, as well as other states. I've done a number of different types of building design in different states and different countries, and I think that through my 10 years of design experience and my 3 years of facilities management experience at OHSU, I've seen different perspectives of what plumbing rules and regulations are necessary. I'm particularly excited about the plumbing board because I think that sustainability is a word that is getting kicked around a lot right now. And I think that the plumbing board sees particular challenges about what should be accepted and what is maybe unsafe. And I think that the plumbing board plays a major role in the safety of the public.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Mr. Vellandre?
Yes.
Vellandre.
I would be the manufacturing piece on the plumbing board on the consensus group. I wasn't actually seeking this position, but the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors sought a nomination and called me, and I was quite honored that they asked me. We're a manufacturer of a virtually code-driven product. The products we manufacture on the plumbing side are water hammer arresters and trap primers, and sanitation issues are paramount in our company. And I was a member of the American Society of Sanitary Engineering Standards Committee for 8 years in writing codes and standards for the industry. And I also worked with IAPMO and the United Plumbing Code over the last 20 years to not only promoting our products but also working on code change. So I feel I have a fair background in issues. I think it's very important that we follow rules and standards when it comes to the plumbing industry, that product is properly tested, and we keep the public safety certainly in mind when we look at these issues. So that's
thank
why
you.
I'd like to be a member.
Questions? You guys are off the hook.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very
we
much.
Appreciate your willingness to serve the state. Thanks for joining us this morning. All right. Next up, Mr. Lindsey Ball.
Here, may I move the table forward a little bit? Might give some.
Sure, that's totally fine. Give people a little bit more leg room. It's not an issue for me. Morning. Welcome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to be the Executive Director of the Department of Administrative Services.
Well, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm a native Oregonian, born here, raised here, educated here in Oregon, hold a degree in wildlife science from Oregon State University. My family holds the original land claim on the family farm that dates back to 1847 when we homesteaded here. So I have quite a long list of generations behind me. It also points out that I have a strong interest in Oregon because I've never left.
That's good.
In addition to that, my employment record, I started working for the Oregon State Police in 1972 as a seasonal employee as I worked my way through college, graduating in 75. And then I came on the Department of State Police permanently that year and moved through from the rank of trooper to the grade of captain. When I left the Department of State Police, I was in charge of the Fish and Wildlife Division of that agency. And then I came to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in 2001, at a time when the department was in, dire straits financially as well as politically and also as service delivery to the citizens of Oregon. I have resigned from the Department of Fish and Wildlife and have accepted the appointment by Governor Kulongoski to the director position of the Department of Administrative Services, which was effective January 3rd of this year. My interest in being the director of the Department of Administrative Services is fairly simple. I want to see efficient and effective government. That's a very strong professional goal that I have. In addition to that, this also comes, as a professional and personal goal, I want to see trust and confidence in our government. And being the director of the Department of Administrative Services allows an avenue for me to have some positive effect on that, in my estimation. With that, Chair Brown, members of the committee, I would respond to any questions that you might have.
My first and probably only question is regarding the state's affirmative action policy and what you see as your plans or visions for increasing the diversity in your particular agency as well as the other agencies in the state.
Chair Brown, and members of the committee, I had an opportunity to take a look at... Do you want me to wait a minute?
No, we'll have James.
Go ahead.
I had an opportunity to take a look at the breakdown of gender and ethnicity in the Department of Administrative Services here about a week and a half ago. And as an example, the Department of Administrative Services is about 50-50 on the gender. There's about 11% ethnicity in the agency, which is about 5% below what the state average is. Now, there are other agencies in the state that have different percentages. My philosophy is pretty straightforward. I think state government, agencies in state government, should be reflective of the people we serve. Now, respective to a plan of action, one of the things I've seen and have experienced in the past, the best way to improve those ratios is how you go about recruitment. And we need to be engaged in recruiting people from those different groups to have them in state government. And sometimes, just by putting an announcement for a job on a web, in a paper, isn't good enough. And quite frankly, a lot of appointments of people in state government where you find good people is a result of a personal relationship that is created between a member of an agency and the public. So, in short order, or in short, we will look at how we recruit, and we will also talk about how relationships between state employees and the public is important to attract others.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I want to draw on my experience as a former small, but a former state agency head with DAS. And it may be premature because you haven't been long enough in the job to really assess the numbers, but I want to address this at a philosophical level. It seems to me that for a long time, DAS has figured out a number of fees and ways to get their hands in the pockets of other agencies. And I want to discuss what your philosophy is about what seems to be fee creep out of DAS with respect to their financial relationships with other agencies. And if you could comment on that at 100,000 feet.
Chair Brown and Senator Johnson, how I see that is similar to what you described. Being from an agency, I've seen Department of Administrative Service deliver assessment fees and such upon state agencies to provide services. And the question I had at times was, do I need the service that they're charging me for? And one of the things that I walked into when I, on January 3rd of this year, was an overview by outgoing interim director Lori Warner of an assessment fee process that they were engaged in. And one of the things that I did after I saw that was I asked, have we had any real good review from agency directors as to whether or not they want these services and whether or not they can afford the fees that are associated with these services. And so we pulled together a group of people, of agency directors, from large and medium and small agencies, and brought them together. First meeting was last Friday, if I recall correctly. And it was quite interesting because we learned firsthand what the agencies thought of some of the proposals that we had for assessments. And
Senator Johnson, I thought I smelled boiling tar and wet feathers on Friday.
And it also was a excellent opportunity for a good, honest discussion about current services that are delivered by the Department of Administrative Services. Education for my program managers, definitely an education for all of my staff. And it's also creating a difference in how we look at the proposals of assessment fees that we have currently in the process. There's going to be a lot of elimination, bottom line. And
those were the words I want to hear. Lot of elimination. That's what I needed to hear.
Well, it was quite a stark reality. Now, we're going to continue to have another meeting with those same agency directors to refine the outcome of the first meeting, and then we will put an assessment package together that would roll forward in the budget building process.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Dr. Bates, you have questions of Mr. Ball, who is here for the Department of Administrative Services hearing.
Senator Bates.
Senator Bates is...
just got back.
Thank you, Senator Bates. We are interviewing Mr. Lindsey Ball, who is a nominee for the Department of Administrative Services Director.
And Lindsey and I know each other extremely well. We worked a lot the last session together. I have no questions on what I see moving. I guess that's up. So I'm glad to see it moving.
Well, Dr. Bates, I thought that you may have encountered Mr. Ball in his previous iteration as an Oregon State Police officer.
On frequent occasions, but we decided not to talk about that.
Senator Johnson, do you have further questions?
Just one more thing, simply to understand where on your priority list the implementation of the Consolidated Information Network is. That is a huge financial undertaking, an extremely complex program to consolidate all of those agency platforms in one secure place. If you could just help the panel understand where that fits in your priorities as you undertake this new portfolio of responsibilities.
Chair Brown, Senator Johnson, it's extremely high priority in the program of Department of Administrative Services. And let me explain a couple things that have taken place the last couple weeks so you can appreciate the priority that we placed on that. One, we're reviewing some contracts we have out with private providers to ensure that they're providing the services as per their contract. Second, we are asking the question, which I think is very appropriate, but has certainly caused some stir amongst some agencies. And the question was, are we reporting a true and accurate depiction of savings from consolidating IT services in 12 agencies into a central location? And in other words, the true savings in that project really exists in the ability to save on costs for personnel, hardware, etc., over 12 agencies versus one location, one entity. If we can do it with fewer people, we can do it cheaper, that's the savings. The question that we've asked, that I asked this last week, was whether or not we're actually recording and stating the savings in staffing levels within the agencies as we move towards consolidation. And that has been somewhat of a learning experience for me, because there are some agencies who feel very challenged as to whether or not they have accurately reported whether the savings and loss of personnel is truly depicted in their estimates.
Senator Johnson?
One follow-on, and this is looking prospectively to the next session. I have had the privilege of serving on the Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government since my legislative service began. And in that time, for each session, there has been a new director of the Department of Administrative Services. That committee looks at DAS's budget. And it seemed to me that there was a tendency, as this went on, to always blame the guy that was gone. Everything that went wrong with the agency happened on that guy's watch. And I can't remember, I can see his face, but his name is gone, who preceded Gary Weeks. And thank you, Mike Greenfield. So we started with Mike Greenfield, and when they came in for the budget presentation, it was give us 17 more positions, and I don't remember these numbers with exactitude, but give us 17 more positions, and we'll end the crisis at DAS. Then he was followed by Gary Weeks. Gary Weeks, we just need 6 more positions, and everything at DAS is going to be hunky-dory. That was followed respectfully by Lori, who appeared before the commission. We just need XYZ at DAS, and everything is going to be fine. There has not been a director of DAS longer than 2 years in my legislative service, and I'm trying to figure out what your approach to managing this major state agency is going to be with that level of executive turnover and the management of the magnitude of the projects that DAS is expected to manage. And I guess I'm also just laying down the caveat, assuming I'm reelected, assuming I have the privilege of serving on that committee again, that I'm going to ask for blaming the dead guy isn't an option.
Well, Chair Ferrioli, Senator Johnson, the dead guy issue has come up to my attention on several occasions in talking.
With respect to Ms. Warner, still sitting there taking sustenance and air, so that's...
And it not only comes from the legislative side of government, but also from the executive branch. And what was interesting is, as I met with staff shortly after I arrived January 3rd, I had a gentleman from within DAS come to me and say, can I have a few minutes with you? I said, certainly. And he had gone to the point of where he had put a list together of the acting interim people in the director's office as well as program managers in DAS. And he asked a simple question, who's my boss?
Legitimate question.
Very legitimate question. And it was quite revealing, because here's a fellow who I've known for a number of years, who works extremely hard, and he just wants to know, who is my boss going to be today, so that we can have a consistent program of delivering services from the Department of Administrative Services. And also, you know, you mentioned Mike Greenfield, but between Mike Greenfield and Lori Warner, there was Gary Weeks and Therese McHugh, and then Lori. And so there's been interim directors interspersed between the time Mike Greenfield was the director and now that I'm up for appointment and confirmation. And I think everyone's recognizing that there has to be some continuity for there to be consistent delivery of program and services from that department in state government. We'll see if we can't heal that up. I'm not intending on being an interim, and my forecast here is I'm going to be around a while. I hope.
And I would just add your formidable track record. You glazed over it a little bit in your opening remarks. When you came to ODF&W, that agency was in absolute crisis. And I think now arguably it's seen as a very well-run agency. High morale with the folks, a clear understanding of what their mission and job is. And I think many of us are very optimistic that you'll bring that same skill set to kind of stabilizing DAS after this many administrators. And the very telling story that you have just relayed to us, I think folks there are looking for some stability. And certainly with the magnitude of the projects that you're going to be handling, the legislative expectations are very high, too.
Thanks.
Senator Bates, any questions?
Not at this time. Thank you.
The chair would just echo what Senator Johnson has just said. Mr. Ball, when you took over the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, you already had a fair degree of credibility in the building with legislators because we were familiar with your work in the Wildlife Division, Fish and Wildlife Division. And I think your credibility is increased because you've got the reputation of being somewhat of a turnaround specialist. And I think that's a good role to be able to play in DAS. You did two things. You visited legislators prior to your appointment at Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, which I thought was good because you had candid conversations with legislators before your appointment. And I think you've done the same. That's a good MO. I know you've been meeting with legislators as we've gone through this process. And I shared with you a question that's bothered me for some time, and we will look forward to the day when you can answer it, which is, does DAS cost money or does it save money? And I think that how we determine that, you already described today, at least a methodology for getting a determination, because I can tell you right now, legislators don't know. And I think adding value is the whole reason to exist for DAS. And if you can make a determination and clarify that for legislators, both will be better served, the agency and the state of Oregon. You've only got the same number of clients as state agencies that exist. And they are the ones that I think finally have to be the arbiter of whether or not you add value. I want to hear from directors of state agencies, boy, we did it quicker, faster, cheaper, better because of DAS's services. And I know that won't be true in every case. I guess I'm also looking for a mechanism whereby the DAS process either adds value or offers a local choice so that the local agency outlets can figure out how to do things cheaper, better, faster, and not be encumbered by the DAS process. So, I'm asking you sort of to walk the wire in that regard. Rumor has it that your potential appointment has caused not a little consternation within the ranks of DAS, and if you're going to impose a flowchart, I can see why that might be true. I'm looking forward to that sort of cultural change within the agency. It's probably the corporate culture that needs to be clarified. And not to say that we should denigrate the previous interim directors, one of whom is in the room, just that I think it's, there's a new marshal in town, figuratively and literally, and I'm looking forward to that regime. Now the only question I have for you is, do you happen to have $172 million about yourself?
Stop it.
Because if you could solve that problem, you'd be worth your weight. No questions. And if there are no other questions from members of the panel, thank you, Mr. Ball, for
thank you.
Appearance this morning. let us bring forward Lori Warner. We've talked about her, you've heard about her, and now a woman who needs no introduction.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lori Warner. I'm assuming you would like me to speak a little bit about my background and why I'm interested in this position. I worked. I'm a native Oregonian. I don't often say that, but I'm. I'm from Bend, which is a town that resembles nothing of what it looked like when I left. So that's kind of an interesting reflection on how the state of Oregon, you know, has changed and grown over that period of time. My background, I worked in local government to begin my career with, and then I came to state government. I have about 17 years worth of experience in state government in a variety of different roles, which I think were laid out on the application form. A good number of those were spent at Department of Administrative Services, which we were just speaking about, in various roles. And prior to that kind of thing, I worked for Department of Education for a period of time, delivering largely federally funded programs for them. I spent time as an acting director and deputy director at several agencies. Parks and Recreation, where I was the deputy director, allowed me the experience of working with the commission and also with getting to know Oregonians across the state, because you had, and legislators and the legislative process in more detail, because you had a state park in every legislator's backyard. I traveled a bunch then and got to know what those issues were about. I spent about a year up at the Public Employees Retirement System as the acting director, managing largely a crisis situation through a transition. Also worked with the commission there, and then back at DAS as the acting director for the last year and a half. So why the employment department? For me, I have had the 17 years of different management level experience in state government. Coupling that with my educational background, which is from Oregon State University and then an MBA from Willamette, I really have always had an interest in the business side of how Oregon does its business. And so the opportunity at the employment department is really to combine my educational background and interest in business with my management experience across state government. In that respect, I think the employment department has just gone through a number of changes themselves in terms of consolidating the unemployment centers and creating the iMatch skill set, which allows the interface of business with the workforce in an online way that streamlines processes. And they're poised basically to work on the governor's initiatives in workforce development, which is partnering both with business, education, and economic development. So that's an exciting opportunity for me in a leadership role, and why I was most interested in this particular position at this time. So with that, I'll open up to any questions you might have.
Senator Bates?
No questions. Thank you.
Senator Johnson?
No, other than to just make the comment how much I've appreciated having the opportunity to work with you when DAS came before my committee, particularly in dealing with the complexities of Scenic. You helped make that whole process very understandable for a technology-challenged legislator, and I appreciate your patience and wish you the best.
Thank you.
Ms. Warner, I do have a couple of questions. One is an admonition. First, I'd like you to keep forcing the agency to report disaggregated unemployment statistics on a county-by-county basis.
I'm glad to do that.
I think the chronic unemployment in rural areas and in reporting areas like inner-city metro areas is something that Oregonians have not come to grips with. It's just sort of background noise, and reporting aggregated statistics show that we're only a point behind our competitors in the region. But mm-hmm. when you go to disaggregated statistics, you'll find double-digit unemployment mm-hmm. in most of rural Oregon. Right. There are really only six counties in Oregon that are posting low unemployment rates, and those are the metro counties and Lane and Marion. It's one of those things. You're being asked to take on a challenge, and that's to connect
education to the workforce issues. Mm-hmm. You know, the role that you're going to be asked to play as the right. director will be significant in moving folks from school to work. That's a big job, and we have not done a very good job of that job. The other thing is that we need to be doing a lot more to help people move from dependency to working self-sufficiency. And part of the problem that we have with DHS is caseload growth, and a lot of that is related to our lousy performance in regional terms in creating new jobs in Oregon. So, you're biting off a pretty big apple. So I appreciate what you're willing to do. I'd like to see if you formed an opinion on why Oregon seems to have such a high chronic rate of unemployment in rural areas and in just relative terms to the rest of the regional economies. Washington, for instance, Idaho, who has an economy, as opposed to Oregon on the other side of the Snake River, who does not. Nevada, which is a tremendous competitor, and California, which is now the seventh largest economy of the world. Now, why are we in the basement chronically?
You know, Senator Farrelly, I don't have formed an opinion yet about what that looks like and why, but I know that that's of interest to you and something the department will have to work towards explaining. So I appreciate the heads up.
Okay. Well, we'll have much opportunity for conversation on the issue.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sounds other good. Questions from the panel? Hearing and seeing none, thank you, Ms. Warner, for your appearance this morning. I'd like to call forward Candace Wheeler, please. She's parole and post-prison supervision. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, we've established an MO here. It's about giving us a little picture of your background and talking to the issue of why you want to be confirmed in your
role. All right. Thank you. I am Candace Wheeler. I live in West Salem. I'm an Oregonian born and bred. I graduated from high school from Central High School, not very far from here, and got my master's degree in social work at Portland State University, and then spent many, many years in public service in social work, almost exclusively in jobs that involved evaluating families and individuals and making decisions and recommendations about where those folks would best fit in a community, in a support system. I've spent a few years out of Oregon in Alaska, and when I returned 10 years ago to my home here in Oregon, I looked for a different kind of job, got a degree in paralegal studies, and began working for the Department of Justice. For the last 6 years, I've been with the Department of Justice, and the last five of those with the Appellate Division, almost the entire time working in a caseload that involved the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. And when I first encountered the Board of Parole 5.5 years ago, I felt like I'd come home, that this was a place that I would be a good match for. And so I've been interested in serving on the board for quite some time. And the reason is because I feel like all of my experience and skills sort of come together in what the board does. I have a very deep understanding of human behavior, what makes people tick, and I have a gift for making decisions about people and how they will fit in their world. I know a lot, because of my experience at the Department of Justice, about the rules and the laws that both authorize the Board of Parole to do what it does and limit the board in what it can do. And last, I have a real passion for hard work, and I see the board as a place where a hard worker is needed at this time.
Ms. Wheeler.
Yes.
Yeah, we're questions? Just about to ask for questions.
Questions? Senator Johnson? Senator Farrelly?
No.
Senator Bates, you back on?
Yeah, I'm on. No problem.
All right. Well, you have wowed us. we appreciate your willingness to take on this task. It is not an easy one at all. And so we appreciate your willingness to serve.
I would only comment that for the nominees that we've seen come through the committee process, you had a very impressive list of recommendations. Yours was a very comprehensive packet and glowing letters of recommendation from colleagues and coworkers.
Thank you, Senator. Everyone's been very kind, and I do look forward to serving. If I'm confirmed, I'll do the best job I can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, John McVeigh, Phyllis Rand, and we're going to get a hold of John Garlington. Maybe he's on the phone right now. morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being so patient with us. We are here on the Black Affairs Commission. Mr. Garlington is... Why don't we go ahead and get started while we're waiting for Mr. Garlington to get on the phone. Ms. Rand, why don't you... Most of us know you very well, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself for the record and why you'd like to serve on this particular commission.
Thank you. Senator Brown, Senator Ferraioli, and Senator Dr. Gates on the phone.
Hello.
And Senator Johnson.
Hello.
Hello. Hang on just a minute. Mr. Garlington?
Yes.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for your willingness to join us. You're being heard throughout the Capitol, and you've got a room full of folks, and in front of on the dais, we've got Senator Johnson, Senator Ferraioli, and myself, and testifying are Ms. Phyllis Rand and Mr. John McVeigh. Did I get that right?
Sure.
So we'll get to you in just a minute, but we appreciate you joining us.
Okay.
And Senator Bates, can you hear?
Yes, I can hear
you.
Thank you.
Great. Yeah. Ms. Rand, take it away.
Good morning. I'm Phyllis Rand, and I'm an advocate, and I'm really excited about the governor's appointment of me to the Commission on Black Affairs. I've been around the legislature since I was a page in the Senate in 1955.
Holy smokes!
Yeah. And the other kind of neat piece is that on June 21st of this last year, you and I share the same birthday, Senator Brown, and I have a little advantage because on that day I was 80, and so I have a little. That's why I had all those years around here at the legislature. I don't feel 80.
You don't look 80.
I don't think 80.
And we know you don't act 80.
And no, I sure don't. And I don't really know how I got here, but that's where I am. And so I'm kind of proud of it.
Right.
And so when I started out as a page in the Senate, I then did things like doorkeeper and worked in the bill room and the mail room, and then they combined those two positions, and I worked there. And in the 1970, I was the receptionist, 71 and 73 sessions for the Senate outside the Senate door. And then I worked as a volunteer with boards and commissions when Governor Bob Straub was governor. And I've just been around the legislature for a long time. In 1982, I was hired by Senior Services Division and the Governor's Commission on Senior Services to be the legislative liaison. So I kept track of the bills, and I designed a tracking chart and attended hearings. And so I, you know, my experience around the legislature has been varied, and I started at the very bottom rung, and I love it. It's just part of who I am. I love being here. I'm always glad when it's time for the session to be finished and it's time to go home, but I can hardly wait for the next session to start. So I bring to the Commission on Black Affairs experience and knowledge of how the legislature works. I have the desire to be to work hard and to I look forward to being a member of this Commission on Black Affairs. I feel privileged to be appointed and hope for your support. I just am really pleased. I just in Monday's paper in the Statesman was a piece, a column done by Beth Casper, and it's called Monday Conversations. And she interviewed a young assisting professor, Emily, what's her last, Drew, and at Willamette University. And they were talking about Dr. King and his contributions to the black community, but what we really discovered was it wasn't just the black that Martin Luther King was interested in. It was the total picture of making sure that everybody had access and there was equality for Latinos, for Asian, you know, for whites, blacks, and even women's rights. So Dr. King didn't understand civil rights was just a black-only issue. So I'm looking forward to the challenges that are ahead, and I would hope for your vote on the governor's appointment of me to the Commission on Black Affairs.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
We're going to hold questions until the end of the panel.
Okay.
So, Mr. McVeigh, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I'm going to have you pull the microphone over. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is going to be tough to follow.
You'll be fine.
My name is John McVeigh, and I'm asking for your support for the executive appointment to the Commission on Black Affairs. I'm a native Texan. I live in Portland, Oregon now. I've been in Oregon for about 13 years now. Did my undergraduate work at Portland State University, have an undergraduate degree in psychology. While I was attaining my undergraduate degree in psychology, I was an advocate for a number of disenfranchised and marginalized communities, including poor children, conduct disordered children, and after that, subsequent to that, for intravenous drug using populations and sexual minority communities. I then went to law school at Willamette University, graduated from Willamette University's Go Bearcats, and have a private practice specializing in criminal defense and personal injury. As a result, I'm seeing some disturbing statistics that come through my office, and I think the opportunity to serve on the Commission of Black Affairs would give me an opportunity to serve my community, to serve the African American community, to serve Oregon as a community, and to do my part in giving back. I think the skills I bring are one in which I've been able to, I believe, interact well with people from all socioeconomic backgrounds. I really enjoyed the intravenous drug using population. What a great group. But I also am comfortable working with business leaders and business professionals. So I look forward to the opportunity to have a dialogue with all members of the community to find out what we can do to strengthen the compact between the community and the government, because it is a compact between government and the community to serve the community. And I look forward to bringing enthusiasm, a willingness to learn, and an opportunity to learn from people with tremendous experience like Ms. Rand here. And I ask for your support for my nomination.
Thank you. Mr. Garlington?
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular commission?
Okay. Firstly, I apologize for not being present. But I've been a part of the community for a number of years, and I come from a family who've been politically activists for the African American community, and I decided that it's time to take the helm and be a part of that process as well. And as John had indicated, I see some disturbing outcomes in the black community that I would like to see. I don't know if I can do it single-handedly, but with community effort and with part of the government, we can make some changes to see if we can steer the rudder of the ship someone. So I really solicit your vote. And I come from a long. I went to one of the cities and put in state for mental health, and I've been a part of gang-related kind of rehabilitation for African American youth. I also come with working with sexual minority youth, and so I come from a pretty varied background. And I also work with bridge builders with Kevin Fuller as well. So I come with a lot of skills to bring to the table to help bring some new insight as far as some of the issues that are ailing the Black community right now, and I would like to be a part of that discussion.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Johnson.
I would just like to renew my question to all the commissions about your commitment to continuing to raise money from the communities that you serve. I have a personal belief that if those people that you serve are not investing in your undertaking of advocacy on their behalf, that shows credibility and value added, that the people that are the recipients of the service are willing to help raise awareness, raise money, raise interest in the work of the commission. And I guess I'd like the reaction from all three of you about raising private sector money to augment the government, the public investment in the work of the commission.
Senator
Ms. Rand, go ahead.
Brown.
And then we'll go to Mr. Garlington.
Senator Johnson. Because this is my first appointment, I really was not aware that boards and commissions were being asked to do this. I think it's a wonderful idea, because the more commitment you have from the people, that it just makes a better working situation. So appreciate your interest.
I think, Mr. McVeigh, do you want to respond as well?
I concur. I believe that it's important to ask the community and expect that the community support your efforts. On the other hand, I think it's not irresponsible for the community to expect results. But if we do our job, then it should be no problem raising money in the community.
Thank you.
Mr. Garlington?
I like to echo what John said, but more importantly, I think when you're dealing with underserved populations, I think economics play a role in some of the disparities and some of the issues that we're discussing here. So I think in light of what we're trying to accomplish here, I think there's some long-term economic strategies that we need to discuss. It's just not what's coming out of their pocket, but what can we do in the long run to help economic disadvantage of African American population in general. So if we can have that kind of discussion, I think that, yes, I think there's some ability to get other people involved and the community involved with economically to be a part of this process.
Thank you. I agree with you, Mr. Garlington. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
Thank you. First, I want to thank all three of these individuals for being willing to serve. Dealing with poverty and race is one of the most difficult things we do in our society, as we all know. And follow up on Senator Johnson's comments. When you're dealing with a group like Cultural Trust, or you're dealing with women's support groups, they have resources by their nature that this group may not. We're dealing with a population that is in poverty to a great degree, and I think we have a responsibility as state government to help support these types of commissions in a way that we might not with others. I appreciate that we should have support from the community and that financial support from the community, but we should remember that we are dealing with a situation that is multi-generational. It is something that's been ingrained in our society, and we need to change. We need desperate change. And I appreciate the effort they're going to try to do with this commission. But we should also temper our ideas of what support might be with the population and the difficulties facing this group. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just feel compelled to respond to that. I don't disagree with what Dr. Bates has said nor any of the three witnesses, but I also think that there are clearly people of capacity in all ethnic communities that value the work of the commission and would validate that work by their financial contribution. And I think that we need to continue to expand the circle to ask the growing African-American entrepreneurial community, the growing Asian entrepreneurial community, the same way that the Commission for Women has reached out to those clear beneficiaries of the work of the Commission and said, for those of you that have financial capacity, validate our work by making a contribution. And I agree with my colleague, Dr. Bates, when he says that in some of the populations that your commission serves, there may not be deep capacity. But I would like to try to grow a philanthropic ethic and begin to help people move towards a point in their own economic lives where they can see value in the work of the commission and that they can respond to that work by giving to their ability to help foster greater outreach and greater engagement and greater successes on the part of all the commissions.
If I can translate for you, I think what she's saying is the legislatures really struggled to fund these particular commissions when we're trying to fund education, incarceration, and medication. And to the extent that the communities can get involved, I think it makes a huge difference on the legislature's willingness to step up to the plate as well. Mr. McVeigh, question for you. You said you're on your resume you're a collector of useless bits of information.
I am.
What kind of useless bits of information would that be?
For example, I was reading an article in The Economist, and it was about South Central Asia. So for some reason, I had to commit to memory all the five countries, which is Uzbekistan, Turkestan, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, and Tajikistan. What purpose would that serve in my life?
I can answer that, Madam Chair.
Because
if Director Ball does a bad job at DAS, he may be living in one of those directing state agencies.
Very good. Those sorts of things.
Thank you. Sarah Ferrioli.
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank Phyllis Rand for 50 years of service to the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
It's just remarkable that we have an opportunity to entertain a nomination from somebody who's got as varied and broad experience as you have. And you are a familiar face and a cheery soul here in the building.
Thank you.
If there is an opportunity for us to disabuse people who think that this is the capital of unintended consequences and confusion, at least there are people that have been willing to commit a lifetime of public service who are not the least bit confused, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. McVeigh, yours appears to me to be a more or less urban background, and I appreciate that. I think you have a fabulous opportunity for growth in this commission, both professional and personal. But please don't overlook the disenfranchised, impoverished, or ethnically diverse, or the elderly in rural Oregon. Many of our communities are experiencing a rapid growth of ethnically diverse population, Hispanic population primarily, but we're entering into a period of time in our history where that is where a lot of the demographic will take us, and economically it'll matter, and opportunity-wise it will matter. You're going to co-locate and share staff with the four other, or with the four commissions, I believe. I think we're doing that, are we not, Madam Chairman?
Yes, we are.
Sharing staff and co-locating. So I would urge you also to recognize and reach out to the other commissions that are available. And I'd ask actually all three of these nominees, Mr. Garlington and Ms. Rand as well, to make the best opportunity you can in networking. I share some concerns that Senator Johnson has shared, although I will say that the commissions have not fared as badly, I think, as our Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board has done. We asked them, we swore that we would only fund watershed councilors for a single biennium, And we told them that they had to go out and do good work and build a constituency base and fund themselves either by creating taxing districts or by arrangements with the landowners that would be self-supporting eventually to sustain the watershed effort in Oregon. It didn't happen. We just created a whole group of people in a new state agency, and now we are funding them forever. So I understand the impulse, and I believe that it's a good impulse that Senator Johnson is exploring, and that is to create a constituency that is not based on the psychology of victimhood, but more or less a celebration of the possibility of embracing the diversity and what that the richness that it brings to our community and to our thinking. So, you know, I know that we've run into this difficulty before, and we're going to run into it again. Legislators sometimes have to choose between delivering direct services to poor folks who are in serious need, as we are with DHS, or planting the seeds that we try to plant with the funding these commissions. And it's a very hard choice to make. And I'm hopeful that your efforts with this commission will take us out of that conundrum. You know, build the support under your commission, and then we don't have to make the choices between trying to fund hope for the future versus the need of the immediate need of the day. So thank you very much for your applications, and you all seem to be eminently well qualified to serve in this commission.
Plus, Mr. McVeigh's got a lot going for him because he lives in my district.
Ah. I see. Yeah.
Reason for confirmation right
there. Yes. Thank you all very much. We appreciate you joining us today. All right. Let's move along. I know that Mr. Parr's family is here. Mr. Parr, do you want to come on up?
Yes, please.
And I assume your children have been out of school for the experience?
They have been out of school for the experience. And they're under strict instructions not to move their shoes.
They were a little older, so they weren't squirming around so much. So exactly. We let them sit and watch for a while. So welcome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Madam Chair, committee people, thank you very much. I'm Jim Parr, and this is my wife, Laura, oldest son, Austin, and youngest son, Ty. And they are doing exactly what you suspected. It's a civics program, but the front half of the day can't compete with the back half of the day, which includes things like algebra and French. So they got to get back to school. I am a financial services person in Portland. I manage finance portfolios, and that's my day job. But my evening job for the last couple of years has been as a trustee in the Oregon State Parks Trust. So I'm here today hoping that I will become an Oregon State Parks Commissioner. I've had an opportunity to travel the state considerably in the last couple of years. I've met Senator Farioli in the past at the Kam Wah Chung Museum. We've shared a spaghetti dinner as we've tried to raise money for that particular project. My background is a little bit unusual. I started life as an architect. I'm a graduate of the University of Oregon School of Architecture. I practiced for 10 years before retiring from architecture to manage money. So while I was practicing architecture, I had quite a focus on historic renovation and preservation projects. That has led me to have a greater awareness and keen interest in many of the state park properties. So as a commissioner, I have a bit of a focus on historic preservation, as well as providing Oregonians with a growing resource of park properties. As many people have mentioned today, the state is growing, and I'm excited to be hopefully part of a team that will enable us to have our state parks program grow as well.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Given that you've had the experience on the Parks Trust, I'm hoping that you have the background to answer this question, because I'm not meaning to blindside you with it. One of the more controversial moves that the legislature made last session was to bring the state fair under the aegis of the Parks Commission. And I have heard a great deal about that at home from supporters of Ballot Measure 66. I have heard a lot about it at home from people who value the state fair as part of the cultural history and heritage of our state. Speak to me a little bit about your philosophy with respect to dealing with the state fair that is an anomaly in your parks portfolio, or at least I submit it's an anomaly in your parks portfolio.
I believe it's widely regarded as an anomaly, and there has been some turmoil over that. I actually am excited about the prospect of seeing if we can come up with a good resolution for the state. And everybody in the room that went to the park or to the fair last year, would you please raise your hand? Who went to the fair?
Now, you brought four ringers.
It's an unfair polling, but it is interesting. It is interesting that the fair is misunderstood by Oregonians. It is not particularly well attended, and there's a lot of work that can be done there. The people that I have met on the state park team are very capable and have really embraced the project. So I am embracing it. I'm looking forward to coming up with solutions. I think that the state will have a better fair in some years, and it is completely unclear as to who will be administering it sometime from now.
I appreciate a very thoughtful answer on a very controversial issue. One
Senator
last,
Johnson,
if you'll
go
indulge
ahead.
Me. I am the beneficiary in my district of some of the really innovative work that State Parks has done as part of the Lewis and Clark commemoration activities. We now have a six-mile park that runs from the Lewis and Clark National Historic Monument, the newest national park in the country, all the way down to the ocean, arguably looking at vistas that Lewis and Clark conceivably could have seen 200 years ago. In my experience, that came because of a can-do entrepreneurial attitude at state parks. Everybody I've dealt with there, from the director, Mr. Woods, all the way down to the guys that were actually pouring the footings for the bridges in the park, approached that task as how do we get to yes. And I have been incredibly impressed with the sort of systemic attitude in parks about delivering good customer service, looking at innovative financing mechanisms, and simply getting the job done. So if your confirmation moves ahead, and I don't see any reason that it wouldn't, you are joining, I think, a pretty nimble, well-run operation, and I applaud parks for doing the work that they're doing all over the state.
Thank you. I'll carry the message.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I do, Madam.
Senator Farrielly.
You know, you have an opportunity to take the helm of an agency that has a dedicated funding source, which is, you know, quite an amazing thing. But legislators, myself included, often hear about the backlog of maintenance needs that are not being met at the same time that we're acquiring new properties, and sometimes by not necessarily a cooperative venture between parks and the legislature. But I share some concerns about that. Increasing and escalating costs to users for the recreational opportunities that they partake in, and properties that we've acquired that aren't scheduled to be used or developed in any foreseeable time frame. So there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff swirling around this department. And I think a reluctance on the part of the agency to divest of itself of properties that are bequests or gifts to the agency that you're sort of stuck with, but you really don't have any management plans for. And I guess I'd like to hear, you know, in the context of the kind of property that you have out there and the fairly aggressive acquisition plans that I've been hearing about, how are you going to deal with some of the properties that you don't use, can't use, don't fit? And I'm not referring to the fair, I'm referring to some of the properties that the State Department owns that are scattered throughout the state of Oregon.
Senator, thank you very much. I think there's about 13 questions
yeah.
there, and about 12 of them I'd like Director Wood to answer. But there is a very interesting situation right now where Parks has a reasonable funding source. The longevity of that funding source is not completely clear. And so I think that there is a need over the next few years to really look at that more closely to see if there is a way to address that and wind into something that might be different in a few years. As far as the properties are concerned, one of the things that I've seen so far is that there's been a real desire to figure out where the population can best grow and use, where the population is growing and best use new park properties. The unused properties I'm not aware of and would like to learn more about that. Certainly, if there's an opportunity to move forward and possibly receive some money from those properties, that should be looked into.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think it was only 3 answers out of 13. Sorry about
that. It's an opening conversation that probably will be ongoing. I'll be around till 2009.
Sarah Bates, any questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you joining us. Your sons are old enough. We hope we'll see them as pages on the Senate or the House floor during next session. It's a wonderful experience, and they get to take the whole day off from school.
That's right.
I can't offer much, but I can offer that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate you joining us.
And 50 years from now, they might get appointed to a commission.
Mr. Martinez.
I was thinking of our previous appointee started out as a
good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Appreciate you joining us today.
Committee. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular board. I only say that with a few, you know.
My name is Ralph Martinez. I'm the current owner of Town & Country Dealerships in the Milwaukee Gladstone area and operations in Wilsonville as well. I'm originally from New York, born and raised, spent time in Chicago training under Daimler Chrysler, which is not Daimler Chrysler, and moved to spend time in New York, Chicago, and Southern California. And I've been in Oregon since 1985, opened my first business. Coming from the East Coast, it was quite enlightening to had no idea what Oregon was about, but the first time I came here, I noticed the beauty of the state and kind of fell in love like most Oregonians do. I think I could bring a different twist to this board. Being from humble beginnings, understanding how workers are dependent on workers' compensation, how important it is to the families of the recipients, God forbid anything that happened to their members, understanding how devastating it could be to a family, as well as starting out as a small businessman with a mom-and-pop operation about 25 years ago and grown into an operation of almost 400 people at one time, running into 2 different states and 4 different cities. So I've kind of gone the spectrum of business to give the aspect of, A, being on the recipient side, seeing people that I've known, family members have injuries and being taken care of, and also the economic side to businesses, how it affects it. Also the aspect of the concerns of keeping Oregon competitive. I'm currently involved with the Brand Oregon Committee with Senator Johnson, and we worked feverishly to try to encourage businesses to thrive and consider Oregon as a place to do business. I feel, SAFE has done a great job in being, I believe, the 9th most efficient workers' compensation insurance agency in the country, due to some of the other circumstances that make Oregon a bit difficult for outside businesses to arrive and try to do business. I think this is a great advantage, and I think it should be kept up.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Johnson, anything?
I just want to say how much I've enjoyed working with Mr. Martinez on the Brand Oregon board. He has brought a very solid business perspective. As late as last Tuesday when we met, we were thinking about ways to garner earned revenue in a program that has not received state funding in the last budget cycle. And I was just appreciative for his entrepreneurial mindset to figure out how we advance the effort of the board by leveraging private sector investment in our work, and it's been a delight to have that very serious business perspective. I am particularly gratified to hear the spectrum of his experiences in helping to inform the deliberations of the SAFE board. That board has been under fire for a long time, and I think somebody who not only is a businessman but certainly understands the beneficiary side of the book of business will be a remarkable addition to the board, and I look forward to your confirmation.
Thank you.
Sir Ferriola?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just to note, along with Senator Johnson, that there's a whole group of folks out there, farmers, ranchers, forest products manufacturers, loggers, people who work in the resource industries that value very highly the services provided by SAFE. So it's an interesting position to be in. I'm glad that you're bringing your business background and business skill to the issue. But it's an agency that serves a very broad base, and I appreciate the fact that you're willing to take on the responsibility.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm humbled for the opportunity. I'm kind of in awe a little when I come. This is my first time I've been in this type of situation, and honored to be among so many people that have dedicating and actually giving Oregon, giving back to Oregon. You know, a lot of people sit on their couches and grumble, but some of you got to get on and get up and make something happen. So.
Thanks for not being a couch potato. So, and we get to, usually we're in a nicer room, but we got bumped by the Marion County Court, so next time you come, hopefully we'll get our own digs back. So.
No problem.
Senator Bates, any questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this, Mr. Martinez.
Thank you.
All right, next up, Terry Dieter. Good to see you. Thanks for being so patient.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and committee members. My name is Terry Dieter. I live in Gresham. I am a native Oregonian and have been a registered architect in the state of Oregon for coming up on 23 years. I personally believe the building and fire codes are one of the most important facets of practice of architecture and engineering in the state. As you can see from some of my background material, I've been actively involved in code development for many years in the state of Oregon as well as in the U.S. I believe if confirmed by the state Senate, that I would be honored to represent the architects of the state of Oregon serving in this capacity. I will make every effort to do my job to ensure that the Oregon Structural Specialty Code, which is the code that this board has oversight for, will continue to be a strong, well-coordinated, and user-friendly code for all stakeholders.
Thank you. Mr. Dieter, I totally agree with you about this role being extremely important for the, I mean, of all the things that we do in government, this is one of the most important, so I, you know, appreciate your willingness to step up the plate. Does anybody have any questions? Senator Johnson smiling, there must be no.
No, I have not.
Okay. Senator Ferrioli?
None.
Senator Bates?
Well, thank you.
All right. You're off the
thank
hook.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Mr. Blackney? Good morning, sort of. We're working on it.
That's right. That's why I checked first.
I appreciated your lobbying effort of sending letters. I thought that was very effective. So for
thank
those
you.
Of us who are a little strapped for phone time, we appreciate the letters.
Thank
so.
You. And then I appreciate the people that did call me back. So.
Not me.
Senator,
I knew I was going to see you.
Senator Courtney actually does some role at Western Oregon University, so he...
we know he does some role. We don't have a clue what it is, but we're very grateful.
Well, I saw the posters as I walked in, so maybe that's what he facilitated.
Okay. Your name for the record?
My name's Gary Blakeney. Do you want a brief overview?
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to serve on this particular board.
Okay. My name's Gary Blakeney. First and foremost, I'm a student at Western Oregon University. I've been attending Western Oregon University for the past 4 years. I come from a first-generation family based out of Missoula, Montana, but I have been here for 9 years. I love Oregon, and it is my home. Other than that, I'm currently the student body president at Western Oregon University, where I've been involved for the past 4 years, every year that I've attended Western, first as the judicial administrator, and then most recently, Chief of Staff and now Student Body President. I'm the senior member and an executive member of the Oregon Student Association, where I have been involved for the past 3 years. I'm currently serving on that capacity as the treasurer of that organization and as the Oregon University System Subcommittee Chair, which is the state board. And in the past, I also served on the United States Student Association representing Oregon students, specifically first-generation and low-income students. So that would be my background.
Okay.
Do you
I know what
more?
Senator Courtney does for Western Oregon University.
Okay.
Oregon, it's our middle name, the slogan.
Yeah, that's
pretty good.
That's true.
All right. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known that. Senator Johnson, any questions? share with us a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, your philosophy of what you come to the board with. Do you have a thought-out agenda that you would like the board to undertake? And this is a board that's in transition right now, has been. Talk a little bit about the value of a student member there and what contribution you hope to make on the board.
Okay. Well, first, for you guys know this, so I'm obviously preaching to the choir here, but the State Board of Higher Education's first and foremost agenda would be make sure that the viability of our higher education institutions, public higher education institutions in Oregon, stay that way. In the last couple of years, state funding has transferred from the majority to the minority, and now it's, I think, at 45 to almost 50% state funding, and then the rest coming from tuition and that sort of stuff. My philosophy on that as a low-income student coming from a regional school who has been involved in this at least on a higher education level for 3 years, that I'm an Oregon student. I think that it should be access to all, and that is my number one priority. Does that mean that I need to get into the discussion of whether it's access or quality? No, I don't think that's a discussion at all. I think that we can definitely provide access to our Oregonians as far as higher education while still maintaining that quality. I have been involved for the past 3 years through OUS and my work through OSA, and I have seen it transition. And we've went from making sure that lower it's become, when I first got on, it was solely for the dollar. It was making sure that we had that money available, et cetera, for students as far as financial aid and that sort of stuff. It has now progressed, at least from our side of it, the students, to making sure that the minority of our students are being taken care of, students of color, sexual identity minorities, and that sort of stuff. Also under access as well. So that's kind of my philosophy, if I answered your question.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. When you say access to all, what do you mean by that?
I think that higher education has now become a necessity in the United States and the world, and we should have the price tag and the barriers, first off, the barriers taken down, but then necessarily the price tag available for all students. I don't think that for a public school, students should be paying the majority of it. I don't think it should go to a high aid, high tuition model, which is what we're normally, what we are looking at now. I think that it preferably it should be high aid, low tuition, or if at a nice compromise, a low tuition, low aid model, so that students are able to go from all areas and all demographics.
One last question. Does your access for all contemplate just financial need or academic capability as well?
Well, first off, I'm not sure of the GPA requirements to most of the schools. I do believe it's a 3-point, and I do believe it should stay at that. I think a 3-point out of high school is definitely doable, and to me that's more of a educational standard, the GPA and the SAT requirements to get into higher education. I think that they're right now at a nice level, whereas we are still allowing students in, and there are nice compromises in the event of you got a low SAT score, but let's say you got a 4-point in all AP courses. Some colleges will make exceptions. So I think that on that level, as far as educational standards, we are there at this moment. We need to now work on financials. If in the future, let's say in a year and a half, if the educational standards start to go and we start lowering it to 2.5, which I don't feel is an acceptable entrance GPA from high school, then yes, that definitely will become my priority. But for right now, it definitely is access in the fact of financial aid, whether it be federal or state, and tuition prices.
Let me follow up a little on her question, and I would assume from what you've said that you would support, for example, I think it's the Georgia model, where all high school students who get a B average or better are entitled to free tuition at their public universities. You like that model?
Well, Yes, as a student who received a B average, yes,
I enjoy
that model. But I'm also not, I also understand where the state is coming from in the fact that in our climate right now, it's definitely not possible.
Correct. And so that was sort of my next question, is that we really wrestled with this issue, and as one who had an incredible amount of assistance from my parents and went to a public university, when we have limited resources, kind of the direction we've chosen at this legislature is to really focus on funding low-income scholarships and raising tuition. So can you live with that for the time being, or do you have a huge plan out there to figure out how to fund our higher education system?
I can live with it for the time being, for sure, and as of yet, I do not have a plan.
Okay. So. Sarah Johnson.
One thing that I have a very strong opinion about, and I would be eager to know yours, is how aggressively the state should be policing up, for lack of a better word, delinquent student aid accounts. You've been given the gift of the opportunity to attend a university on a loan basis, not you specifically, but a person has. But what's your philosophy about coming after those delinquent accounts when someone says to the state of Oregon, I don't prioritize you highly in my repayment schedule?
Well, I would say, first off, that, you know, students as a whole, Oregon students, like to say that we're adults. Most of us are entering these contracts at least past our 18th birthday, and so we are adults in the state of Oregon's eyes. And so by entering in those contracts, we have an obligation to then pay back whatever monies we have borrowed from the federal government or the state government. I would say after my 6 months or whatever it is after I leave Western Oregon University, I will hopefully be very obliged to pay back those monies. And I feel that we have made that contract, and we have put our word forward that we would pay those back. So I would say aggressively as the state would need to get their monies back.
Thank you.
Senator Bates?
No questions.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's...
time, you got into a very long and interesting discussion there, but I guess it's trying to move through decisions on these candidates. But the discussion about higher ed funding of it and what happens to low-income students is a completely different one, but we'll get into that, I think, in the session.
We certainly will, Senator Bates. Thank you very much for joining us. All right, Home Care Commission, Kay Kirkbride, come on up.
Senator Brown.
Senator Bates, are we losing you?
I'm reaching a point, I believe, that we had committed to 11 o'clock this morning. Do you need me for any votes later this morning?
No, I think we're okay, assuming Senator Farioli comes back.
Okay, if you need me, just call me on my cell, as you've done, and I can break and come back and get you out.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for allowing me to use my phone. It's completely damaged. It's been extremely helpful.
Thank you, Senator Bates.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I didn't realize he was leaving about that. Otherwise, I would have had him vote, but that's all right. Your name and why you would like to serve on this particular commission.
Yes, Chair Brown and Senators, thank you for having me. My name is Kay Kirkbride. I live in Hillsboro. I'm a native Oregonian. However, I have lived in two other states, but I'm back home. And I've been back home for almost 30 years. I would like to serve on the Home Care Commission because I have a strong interest in home care. I'm a retired RN. I spent over 40 years in nursing, and the majority, 99% of my nursing career was in community-based care, public health first, and then home health care. And I see the need for in-home workers so that individuals can stay in their homes. That's where the majority of people want to be, is in their own homes. And if we do partner with them as a state, if we do partner with them, then we need to assure that they have quality care, that the caregivers have integrity, and that both the caregivers and the clients who they serve need to be protected. I'm on the Governor's Commission for Senior Services also, yes. And they have had a liaison to the Home Care Commission, and that individual's term is expiring. And so when I was asked by the Senior Commission if I would consider applying for the liaison position to the Home Care Commission and coming in front of you fine people, I welcomed that very much because that is my passion. I also teach caregiver classes for family caregivers, and I see the need there too for quality in-home services for people who are saving us money, family members who are saving us money by caring for their loved ones in their own homes.
Thank you. I really appreciate your perspective. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, my husband serves with this nominee on the Commissioner on Senior Services and told me if I didn't support her nomination that I shouldn't come home tonight. She has been an invaluable asset to that commission and I think will do splendidly in this position.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Ferriero?
No, I just, the mention of the Commission on Senior Services, are you acquainted with a person named Grace Williams?
I'm sorry, I'm not.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the interface between the two commissions. I think that'll be extremely useful. This is an issue very near and dear to my heart, and a good friend with MS, and she's now an adult foster home and 50 years old. So saw what she and her partner struggled with for several years. So appreciate your willingness to do this. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And thank you for considering me.
Of course. Ms. Marcosino?
Good morning. You'll have to pardon my cold, so if I start coughing, healthcare workers also get sick. Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Patricia Marcosino. I am a registered nurse, and I am the Chief Nursing Officer at Kaiser Sunnyside Hospital, and I'm honored to be asked to sit on the Board of Nursing. I recognize the issues that are facing nursing. We have a workforce shortage. We have a need to find enough help for the rural areas. We have patient safety issues that we need to be addressing. And I believe that the breadth of my experience and the variety of nursing positions that I've held will help me identify and be able to represent nursing throughout the state of Oregon well.
I think you stated the challenges very accurately. Questions? I'm sure if Dr. Bates here, he would have questions for you, but he's left, so you're you can feel free to go. So
thank you very much.
Mr. Cast, Psychiatric Security Review Board. For those of you still remaining, you may be wondering why we're going through all of these witnesses and asking some of them very few questions. And it's just been my experience that by bringing folks down, that we get an opportunity to see the breadth and depth of experience that are helping us on our boards and commissions. And it's a really good opportunity for us to start networking better with our boards and commissions. So I appreciate your willingness to spend all of your morning here with us. Mr. Cast, welcome.
Good morning. Senator Brown, members of the committee, I'm Barry Cast. I'm a psychiatric social worker trained at Portland State University, and I recently retired from state service after more than 30 years of working with people with serious mental illness and inpatient care, community mental health, and for about 20 years at the Department of Human Services down the street, serving as the administrator of the mental health division for a while. The population that is under the jurisdiction of the Psychiatric Security Review Board is one of the most stigmatized populations in the state. Having a label of criminally insane makes it very difficult and challenging to achieve full recovery and full community participation for those who are able to leave the hospital. This position is one that I was interested in long ago, but because of my service as an administrator of the forensic system, was unable to participate in. With all of the interest in mental health services, I offered my services to the governor, and he made this appointment. I'm looking forward to joining four other very talented members of that board in what is sometimes a very frustrating, difficult, and long process of finding an appropriate disposition for some very ill people who have not had the opportunities other people have had for community participation.
Thank you, Mr. Cass. We really appreciate you bringing your extensive experience in this arena to this particular board. Just want to clarify for the record, you are retired from working for the Department of Human Services. Is that correct?
That is correct. There has been some mystery about that because I retired May 1st, but shortly after I announced I was retiring, Mr. Weeks decided to leave his position, and I was asked to stay on through the end of the session, and then Brian Johnson asked me to be his interim deputy, and that ended on November 30th, and I am not affiliated with the department formally in any way.
No plans in...
No.
At this time. Okay. No. Thank you. The reason why I ask these questions, committee members, is that this is Mr. Cass will be filling the slot of a public member, and according to the statute, wanted to make sure he was actually a public member. So, Senator Johnson, any questions?
No.
Senator Farrielly.
Madam Chair, yes. It seems to me somewhat a delicate matter to balance the needs of those constituents that we serve with the need for the public to be protected. How do you do that?
Thank you,
Senator Farrielly. That is the puzzle that is faced by the Psychiatric Security Review Board, and it is clear from legislative intent when the board was created and the system established that public safety was the primary function of the board. But I do not see an incompatibility between public safety and treatment and recovery. In fact, safety is dependent on effective treatment, and as you probably are aware, there is a lawsuit now in process challenging the adequacy of treatment at the hospital. So I think the pathway to safety is to provide the right kinds of services and the right kinds of supervision. And the board actually has done a good job with that. The rate of recidivism of this population is almost zero over what is now nearly 30 years because of the way the legislature established the controls and the ability to revoke community placement. So I think that the track record is good. Where we have really a need to improve, I think, is in insisting on better care and more responsive services in environments that are architecturally and from a staffing perspective better equipped.
Madam Chairman, I guess I see no incompatibility, and I'm glad to hear the answer that I did. The reason I see no incompatibility is that I've regarded an act of antisocial behavior to be ultimately self-destructive. And so there seems to be no incompatibility with protecting the citizens from that antisocial act and protecting the individual from, you know, the proximity or the opportunity to act out in that way. And so I'm hoping that we'll continue to have a positive record in making the appropriate decisions about placement and whether that be in the institution or in the community.
Senator Farrielly, Senator Brown, I do too, and I hope I can participate in that process in the future.
Mr. Cass, just to compare, I don't remember the recidivism rates of our criminal justice population off the top of my head, but I assume in comparison it's extremely high, 30% or 40%.
Senator Brown, the last time I was informed, it was like 44%, something like that.
Okay.
They have certainly a much larger population with much less statutory control.
The only other issue I would raise for you is I've spent a number of years working on creating our Juvenile Psychiatric Security Review Board. I'm extremely concerned about our juveniles who are in locked-up facilities because of their mental illness. I'm concerned about juveniles who may be living in the community and safety concerns there. I look forward to working with you as we create a system that will both provide treatment for these juveniles as well as make sure the community is safe as we develop that system. So thank you.
Senator, I know that's been a concern of yours, and I've talked with the Executive Director, Mary Claire Buckley, about participating in the creation of another branch of the board, which will be responsible for that, I think, July 07, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. We'll look forward to working with you on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Next up, Ms. Burns, come on up, and we're going to get Mr. McCowan on the phone. How are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, just want me to talk about my experience.
Yep.
For the record, my name is Bridget Burns. I am
no longer a member of the State Board of Higher Education, contingent upon my successor's confirmation today. But I have served in that capacity for, this is my second term. Within that capacity, I've worked on the Access and Affordability Working Group, which is the working group working to change the Oregon Opportunity Grant to be more responsive to Oregonians. I've also recently been appointed to the Institute for College Access and Success, which is a national nonprofit funded by the Pew Charitable Trust, a think tank, on student debt, so I'm serving that. Also, I previously served as a student body president at Oregon State University, where I focused a great degree of my efforts toward fundraising and developing grant programs for needy students in Oregon, specifically OSU students, obviously. I'm currently also serving on the Commission for the Legislature. I'm a graduate student in public policy at Oregon State University and previously received my bachelor's degree there in political science. I'm
Do you have time to work on top of all this?
Yeah. No, actually, I don't. I do research, actually, for the Gates Foundation on the Oregon Small Schools Initiative at OSU, but otherwise, yeah, I'm just a graduate student.
Right. All right. Questions for Ms. Burns?
It just amazes me, Madam Chair, that political science majors find gainful employment in the real world. And it's almost like English majors, a test from personal experience. So.
Well, I'm certainly not an example of an employed political science major yet.
Not yet. I guess, Madam Chair, that was more of a warning than it was an observation.
Well, I'm going to law school after this, so.
Oh, are you? Have you applied?
No, I'm going to probably go in 2007. So.
Okay. Talk to me first. Senator Johnson.
My only question would be whether or not you have a personal philosophy about student debt and the need to repay student loans, how aggressively the state should go after delinquent accounts with student loans, how the state should treat those delinquent accounts.
Now, my experience with that is it's not as significant of a problem as many would assume. Most students do repay those loans. Also, it is a federal issue because you're also talking about federally funded loans. I do think that we should clearly enforce regulations in this arena. I think that about the issue of student debt, though, I think we need to be more conscious about the implications of the burden that we're placing upon students once they graduate. I think that's the reason that I'm a part of the TICUS, which is the nonprofit which is focusing on developing some sustainable solutions to the student debt epidemic that we have in America. I think it's something that can be crippling for Oregonians, and I think that we have to be aware of it. I also think that, especially considering the Oregon Student Assistance Commission is focusing on how to alleviate student need using grants and loans, I think that we need to realize that when you use a grant, it doesn't necessarily have the same implications in someone's life as giving them a loan to achieve overcoming needy barriers. So I guess my answer is I think we should focus on enforcing regulations in that arena. I think we should be more conscious of the implications of debt in people's lives and work to create, I think, sustainable solutions such as loan repayment programs, perhaps through government service programs, because clearly we don't have a solution yet to the student debt problem.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry for you. I really appreciate the discussion about student debt as opposed to just the issue about student loans. Do you know what the average student debt is? I mean, I have heard numbers between $25,000 and $40,000 per student when they upon graduation on a baccalaureate degree, and $100,000 or more for professional degrees.
It's I think the number is about 22 something around there for in Oregon for bachelor's degrees. Myself, it's much higher. As a low-income Oregonian, I have depended on student loans, and I understand the reason how that's going to be debilitating perhaps in the future. But my personal philosophy about that is that I'm really fortunate to have gotten a college degree, to get a master's degree, and if what I have to pay for that is being $50,000 in debt, then I'm willing to incur that because I know that. I mean, that was a conscious choice I made. I unfortunately don't think that many people go into it as open-eyed as I have, and unfortunately can wield, I think, problematic implications, especially for student families in the end.
And not a question, but offline, I'd like to understand what your strategy for getting through law school is going to be.
So. Well, Senator Ferriola, that's a whole other issue because Ms. Burns may not tell you, but I will. Folks coming out of law school have debts typically in the neighborhood of $70,000 to $100,000. So that's why we have such difficulty recruiting good lawyers to work in rural Oregon, because the debt loads are so high and it's hard to make that level of income. So
I'm planning on a graduate assistantship as well, which is how I afford to go to graduate school myself right now.
Right.
So I'll be working while I'm in law school.
She's pretty clever, but
come up with some.
All right. Anything else? Mr. McCowan, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. You may have heard part of Ms. Burns' testimony about why she wants to serve on the Student Assistance Commission. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on this particular commission?
Yes, I apologize for not being there. I have the joy of getting to babysit my six-month-old beautiful son this morning. You guys have impeccable timing. I'll just lay him down for a nap. So I've been carrying him around all morning waiting your call and laid him down. About 3 minutes later, I received the phone call. So anyway, I am the former student body president of Lane Community College and vice chair of the Oregon Student Association. I did a lot of work last year on increasing the amount of state funding towards the Oregon Opportunity Grant and community college and university funding. I think I have a unique perspective because of my experience as both a community college student and now I am at the University of Oregon, sort of managing and mediating the need between universities and community colleges. I think oftentimes the two entities sort of work against each other, and that's one thing that I tried to do last year. And my role is really mediate those differences, and especially in issues regarding the Oregon Opportunity Grant. I heard Ms. Burns speak about student debt load, and myself, after 2.5 years of LAID, am already $22,000 in debt. I believe that the average is skewed heavily by students who are receiving most of their payment from their parents while they're in school, and that the biggest problem is on the backs of students who are actually paying for their own school, and where the average may be $22,000 for a bachelor's in Oregon, it's actually much higher for those who actually carry the debt. There are numerous people who carry very little debt because of their positions and the family's ability to pay for them. Other than that, currently I am serving for the Lane County Human Rights Advisory Committee and doing some work with the student government at the U of O, but focusing mainly on school this year and raising my son. So I suppose I would like to answer any questions.
Questions from the panel? I think not. Ma'am?
No. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your willingness to serve on the panel, both of our applicants, and thank you for being willing to do this telephonically. It makes it more convenient for the members of the committee to be able to hear from applicants, even if the applicant can't attend in person. So thank you very much. Melissa Sass and Sam Stern, please. Sam will be by telephone, and Ms. Sass will appear in person. Welcome and good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and member of the committee at this moment. I'm Melissa Sass. I'm a current resident of Tigard. I'm a native Oregonian and a proud graduate of Oregon Public Schools. I am in my eighth year with the Beaverton School District. I've served as an elementary classroom teacher, an ESL teacher, and I'm currently a teacher on special assignment in the Human Resources Department for our central office, where I work with the recruitment, retention, and licensure issues for our elementary, special education, and substitute staff. I'm looking forward to being a part of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission because I believe that the quality of teachers is directly related to student success, and the focus of the commission is to ensure that we have a high-quality pool of teachers throughout the state of Oregon. I welcome any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson?
I have none.
No? Senator Johnson has no questions. Mr. Stern, are you there?
Yes, I am.
We'll begin with a brief statement from you about your background and why you wish to serve.
Thank you. This is Sam Stern, and I live in Corvallis, Oregon, and I'm a member of the Faculty of Education and serve as Dean of the College of Education here at Oregon State University, and have spent most of my life in school as a student, as a teacher in the classroom, and as a faculty member involved in teacher education programs, and I'm very committed to helping to work in support of success for all students and to assure the highest quality teachers. I look forward to serving on the commission and hope that I can be helpful.
Great. Thank you. Questions from the committee? You must have wowed them. There are no questions.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sass. Mr. Stern, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, wage and hour, Mr. McDonald. You're not the last, though.
I was going to say, and then there was one.
No. No, maybe you are the last one. With the other two by phone.
Somebody has to be last.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, Senators, just a brief history. I've been an Oregonian for over 35 years. I'm a citizen of Clackamas County. I live in the city of Happy Valley. I'm the Executive Vice President of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. We represent over 20,000 workers here in Oregon. We have, I believe the number's right around a couple thousand miners that are our members that are particular interest to our organization as well as myself. I have two children, one in high school that's entering the workforce, I hope, here on a part-time basis to start saving money for college. So,
where's your high schooler going to school?
Clackamas. Okay. So we have our own issues out there on growth and funding and those kinds of things, which our whole separate issue.
Yes, certainly from our issues.
Yes, exactly. So basically, that's my interest in the Wage and Hour Commission. And I have a duty and obligation as a citizen to sit on this board, I feel. And I currently sit on the Workforce Investment Board in Clackamas County as well. So.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate your willingness to serve. Any questions?
I think they're pretty worn. That's the good thing about waiting until the end, is that the committee members, including me, are all worn out. So thank you very much. Appreciate all your hard work. And
thank you.
Look forward to working with you on this commission.
Likewise.
So,
thank you.
All right. A couple people by the phone. Only two people by the phone.
Chances by being with you.
Yeah.
I'm coming off the commission. He's taking my
Thanks for coming.
Just two more?
Or we have more. Okay. Then we have to vote.
Then we have to vote. Hey, you guys, we'll get you out of here in 5 minutes. Okay. I know, you're calling. Oh. Okay, I bet it's Senator Johnson Groupie.
We're just all my commission meetings, too.
Okay.
We've had plenty.
It was a navy blue day. Nancy, do you have a navy or is it black?
Oh.
You didn't get the dress code?
Apparently not. Nobody sent me the memo. When I checked with staff earlier today, they said that, or yesterday, they said this meeting about
today?
Yeah.
Oh, you know me better than that.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello, this is Vince Leedy.
Hi, Vince Leedy. This is Kate Brown chairing the committee today. Senator Farioli's here. Senator Betsy Johnson's here.
Okay.
We just have a few questions for you. You are at the end of the pipeline, so to speak.
Okay.
And there's basically not a lot of folks in the room, but you are being, shall we say, piped throughout the Capitol.
That may be a good thing.
So could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Board of Boiler Rules?
Sure. A little bit about myself. You have my background information.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I got involved in safety. I went to work at Orida Foods here in Ontario.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I was hired in at as a safety trainer. And what I did there was developed programs for line operators and pressure vessels training people, which I didn't know anything about actually, but I involved the people that were out there to help develop training programs on how to operate things and do safety processes and so on. And from there, what I continued at Oriya Foods involving the pressure vessel side involved our boiler operators on setting up training programs and safety inspection programs outside of what the state does to ensure that our boiler rooms, our boiler areas, and pressure vessels were up to snuff all the time. Going the extra mile, I guess, if you want to say. Then at National Frozen Foods, went there, there in Albany, Oregon, and basically did the same thing there as manager of human resources. Was also the safety officer for the plant. Developed some safety programs with the help of many other people. And then came back to Oriya Foods, and the title there was loss prevention manager. And under that umbrella came compliance with every inspection agency except for OSDA and USDA was responsible for the inspections, the safety guidelines, and ensuring we were complying with those guidelines, and would, you know, give the officers or be with them when they did the tours. And again, back to the boiler vessels was one thing we were very proud of, and was always glad to show people to that. Came to Holy Rosary Medical Center as the title director of facility services. Under that umbrella was also the safety officer for the hospital, as well as, again, with the Oregon OSHA compliance, DEQ, we do deal with those in some areas, not a whole lot with EPA. But again, here at the hospital, when I first came in, we had low pressure boilers. Now we have three 350 horsepower Kewaunee boilers that our team of maintenance guys, we ensure that they are, we go the extra step to ensure everything is working properly. And as I was looking through our boiler, our last inspection, everything, we have had no violations at all in the inspection. And that has to do with, yes, I'm the manager, but again, by the people that are on the team, we've had a couple things like some weakened tubes and so on. But again, safety of the employees has been my big concern, or not concern, but it's something I'm an advocate of. So that's a little bit about me and that part of the world.
Great.
Okay.
No questions.
This group has absolutely no questions. Senator Farioli, though, probably has a comment.
Just an observation. It's very,
okay.
Very nice to talk to somebody that's an hour ahead of us.
Yeah, you guys get to go to lunch here. Well, at 25 minutes.
Right, and thanks very much for talking to us on your lunch hour. I just wanted to point out that some of us in the legislature serve two time zones.
Well, that is very true. You do. That's true.
Thank you.
So, yeah, and I appreciate it very much. And I appreciate the service that you do also.
Thank you.
Okay,
I appreciate your time.
Bye bye.
If we ever get to lunch, we will.
Okay.
All right. One more. All right. Mr. Warner, also living in that part of the country, but I think he's in Baker City, as I recall.
Yeah, in this time zone.
Yes.
And then we need to vote. And as much as I love both of you, I really need both of you here while we vote on all of these appointments this morning. So
we're hanging in.
Kind of came with the territory, man.
I know. But just, you know, in case you were, like, ready to pass out for lack of food or whatever.
No.
Okay. Mr. Warner.
Yes.
Kate Brown, welcome.
Hello, Chairman Brown. How are you?
I'm good. Senator Johnson's here. Senator Farioli's here. He must be your senator, as I recall.
Yes. Senator Farioli is my senator.
Yes. All right. Mr. Warner, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular commission
And you're also currently serving on the Baker County Board of Commissioners, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Okay, yes, my name's Fred Warner, Jr., and I am the chairman of the Baker County Board of Commissioners. The reason that, there are several reasons, children and family situations are issues in Eastern Oregon, and my goal for the state Oregon Commission on Children and Family is to get to be the advocate in the legislature and the governor's office when it pertains to anything that involves children and families. The board, the state board is a broad-based interest group, and I believe it should compile data, have credibility with the decision makers, and provide a consensus-based agenda for children and families. Additionally, county commissions, boards of commissions, have a lot of dealings with children and families, and I believe they need to have an advocate on the state commission.
Thank you. Mr. Warner, and just for the record, there's somebody by the name of Chris Warner working in the governor's office. That is your brother, correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Farrioli.
Chairman Warner, the DHS, Department of Human Services, has a strong interface with the Commission on Children and Families. And currently, we're obviously in a transitional period with DHS and in a sort of a stressful period with DHS on budgeting issues. What's the history of the relationship between DHS and the commission in Baker County?
It's been really good. As you know, in rural Eastern Oregon, we have limited resources everywhere. The thing about children and families is the pot, you know, there's lots of different pots of money. The challenge that we have in Baker County, and I think in a lot of different areas, is how do we, you know, coordinate and use all the different resources we to actually put the best programs on the ground. We struggle with that in Baker County. I'm assuming it's a statewide thing. Our relationship with DHS here is very good, and we have a lot of innovative programs. But it is a challenge. We'll continue to be.
Senator Johnson, any questions?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
I only have one question for this nominee. How's Jerry Gillum doing?
Who am I speaking?
Senator Betsy Johnson from Scappoose.
Oh, how are you, Senator Johnson? Mr. Gillum is, he's hit the ground running, and he is, he's taking no prisoners.
Good. Will you give him my regards?
Yes, and I'm supposed to give my regards from the good mayor of Baker City also.
My primary care physician, I come over to Baker City for my medical service.
Yes, and we appreciate that.
Thank you.
I will say, Mr. Warner, the last time I saw you, I think I'd flown over in a single-engine airplane with Mr. Joe Smith, who we voted earlier today to confirm his appointment to the Aviation Board. But now, after talking to Senator Johnson and two-engine airplanes, I'm never doing a single-engine again. So you might not see me for a long time.
Well, there are a lot of single-engine planes, and we, you know, come back and see
it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your time. We'll let you get back to work.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Bye-bye. That's great. I didn't realize it was chair of the commission. That was a quick rise to the top. All right. We're going to go into a work session. We're going to do all these appointments. I'm just going to go run through them. We'll do all the appointments in black. I'm going to pull out, I know, the paid positions, and there are a few others that some members had some objections to. If you have any that want to be pulled out, let me know. And then we'll assign carriers afterward once we figure out who's in block and who's not. Senator Farrioli, anything particularly you'd like to carry?
At your convenience.
Okay. And Senator Johnson, we already spoke, so.
I live to serve.
All right.
Actually, Madam Chairman, I would like to carry the nomination for the boiler inspector and for the Children and Families Commission.
Okay.
If those are in block, would you carry the whole
thing?
Madam Chairman, it wouldn't bother me to carry the whole thing.
Okay.
Although I will say that my voice may not be up to the task.
Oh, I'm confident that by tomorrow and a little bit of hot lemon with some honey, you will be in good shape.
You may live to rue that, or I may.
All right. Okay, the chair would move the following appointments to the... let's see, I should use the language so I get this right. I'm closing the public hearings. I'm opening the work sessions and moving the following appointments with the recommendations that their appointments be confirmed. Director of Department Administrative Services, Lindsay Ball. Director of Employment Department, Lori Warner. State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, Candace Wheeler. Commission on Black Affairs, John Garlington, John McVeigh, Phyllis Rand. Board of Boiler Rules, Vincent Leedy. Building Code Structures Board, Terry Dieter. State Commission on Children and Families, Fred Werner. Trust for Cultural Development Board, Norm Smith. Oregon Government Standards and Practices Commission, Judy Stigler. State Board of Higher Education, Jerry Blackney. Home Care Commission, Kay Kirkbride. Oregon State Board of Nursing, Patricia Marcosino. State Boards and Parks Recreation Commission, James Parr. Oregon Patient Safety Commission Board of Directors, James Morton. State Plumbing Board, Sky Dancy, Jack Falandre. Psychiatric Security Review Board, Barry Cast. Board of Directors of State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation, Ralph Martinez. Oregon Student Assistance Commission, Bridget Burns, Anthony McGowan. Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, Melissa Sass, Sam Stern. Wage and Hour Commission, Jeff McDonald.
Are all reappointments.
All right. And then I move the fall. You know what? Let's just vote on that one. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none? So ordered. And we'll deal with carriers after we walk through who's doing what. The chair would move the following reappointments, and I'm going to say this. Chair would move the following appointments that have been waived, which are reappointments to their respective boards and commissions. Commissions on Black Affairs, Amber Harper. Electrical and Elevator Board, Michael Marner. State Fish and Wildlife Commission, Marla Ray.
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
Is your motion for an en bloc confirmation?
On these, yes.
Because I think I have a couple of members who want to vote at least for one of these individually.
Let's do the motion here, and then when we get to the floor, we'll pull out the separate motions. Does that make sense?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Jose Ibarra Munoz. Land Conservation Development Commission, Dennis Derby, Tim Josie. Oregon State Board of Nursing, Marguerite Gutierrez, Beverly Shields, Sandy Teese. Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors, Kirby Dias, Scott Gibson. State Parks and Recreation Commission, Sharon Rudy. Board of Commissioners of the Port of Portland, William Thorndike. Public Employees Retirement Board, Thomas Grimsley. Oregon Student Assistance Commission, Bob Wheel, Dean Wendell. Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, Nancy Watt. So the motion was to waive their appearances and confirm their reappointments on the Senate floor. Discussion? Objection? Hearing none? So ordered. Okay. Senator Farioli, do you know what those appointments are? Can you get those to my office?
Madam Chair, I'll get them to your office before the end of the day.
That'd be great. And we have a couple from our office. We will pull out the paid positions. Those will be separate. Senator Johnson, I'll probably have you carry those and have Senator Farioli carry the remainder in block, and then there'll be a few separate, and I'll carry them or we'll figure it out. Okay?
That's cool.
Anything else to come before the committee? Thank you. We appreciate your attention span and your willingness to move forward so we can get these appointments so you could leave before 4 o'clock.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we're adjourned.